Welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chods. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your host, it's Mark and Jamie.
Hello and welcome to episode 32 of the Carpcast. How's it going, Mark?
It's going fabulous. You know, 32 is a special number for me. You know, my first 430 is always £32. not a bad figure to be stuck on.
Nope. All good. What have you been up to? Any fishing?
No fishing. Since we last recorded, I've been at work every day.
Oh yeah, you got an extended few days last week, didn't you? And then had to work all week.
Yeah, to make up for, well, covering for another lad who was off this week. So I had an extended break, plans to do fishing, but as we discussed last week, it didn't quite go as planned.
No, I've got a busy week coming up. Obviously, we were late with the last Carpcast, so we're recording this not too long after we've just recorded one. Although a few things have happened news-wise since then, so we've got plenty to talk about on the show. We've got Mr. Kevin Nash coming up later as well from my interview last week. We've got loads of news on the Carpcast Extra, all the usual stuff. The venue Top Trump seemed to go down quite well, although we had a steward's inquiry, which we'll talk about later. But it's the Northern Angling Show next weekend, so we're recording this on Friday. You'll hear it Saturday. The following weekend will be balls deep at the Event City in Manchester.
Sort of show are you putting on?
Balls, you know, those things we put on our rigs and cast out.
Boilies, oh, of course. I don't know what I was thinking of.
Yeah, there'll be loads of them. Sarah's been hard at work this week as well. We've got all our new jingles.
New jingles,
yeah. Everything's going well, but unfortunately not much time for fishing. I could have gone probably Sunday, which is Valentine's Day. I could have gone, but at the minute the forecast is showing like -3 every night. So with the lake that I would have gone to being shallow, it's probably will freeze while I'm there, and I don't fancy slogging it out for literally a bite when the place is pretty consistent. As soon as we get some nice weather, I'll be expecting half a dozen bites. So I don't fancy grinding it out for one there, you know, mid-20 or whatever.
I've got a chance to get out this week. Yes. Usually go Sunday after work, but obviously that's Valentine's Day, so, you know, the wife will demand my presence. But I've got the chance of a 24 hours from Monday morning.
Ah.
So have you seen the forecast for Monday yet? I've not looked.
Yeah, -3. That's when I was going to be
all
there.
Through.
Yeah, I think it's slightly different certain parts of the country, but where I was looking at, it was showing -3.
I think I'll be breaking out the hot water bottle.
Carpcast Extra.
I hope you all enjoyed the Carpcast Extra. Now you've had a chance to listen to it. If you haven't subscribed, you can do. For only £35 a year, there'll be at least 12 episodes, but at least one a month. We might slip a few extra ones in as well, as we've got quite a bit of material. You can subscribe for $4.99 a month to support us. It kind of guarantees that we can keep the time available for doing the free one as well. So it's totally optional, but there's loads of benefits to being a Carpcast Extra subscriber. Whenever we release the social dates, it will go out to subscribers first. And we'll be doing giveaways. We might even give away a place on one of the socials to somebody who subscribes to the Extra, and basically any news, gossip, anything good will go to the people that support us first before being put out to the general public. But there is no obligation, but if you want to guarantee that we do this forever, then subscribe. You agree,
yeah, do
Matt?
It, damn it.
£35 a year to keep your favourite podcast going. I don't think that's too much to ask, but we're going to make sure the content's decent on there, and it is giving us ideas for content for the normal show as well, so you tight people are going to get the benefits of the Extra as well.
Go, shots fired!
Because we're going to do the in session feature, which we did on the podcast, which was kind of a step by step walk through from me arriving at the lake. Well, it started off as me in the van, like a couple of miles away. You can hear the sat nav and everything, and you know, arriving at the lake, deciding what to do with my rods, catching a 50-pounder, catching more fish. You know, the usual session. It's a step-by-step guide and thought process and just a bit of a journey. And we're going to introduce that into the normal podcast. I know Mark's dying to do one when he gets out and when he...
I'm dying to go fishing and actually stick a hook in something.
Yes, other than your thumb, which is what I happened to do on the previous session, which we did record a lot of that as well. That will go out at some point. But yeah, if you want to subscribe to the Carpcast Extra and support both Mark and I, then you can do so. www.thecarpcast.com. Check out our new website. We're going to be introducing all sorts of stuff on there. We've just had the designs through for our t-shirts, hats and hoodies. All you people that have been pestering us for merchandise, you can the carp gods giveth, or the carp cast giveth. The Carp Cast giveth the Carp Gods t-shirt. We're doing a Carp Gods t-shirt. It says the Carp Gods giveth. Might even get
the
Carp
Cast selleth.
The Carp Cast selleth, yeah. We might even get this up on get some pictures up for hype on the Facebook page at some point, because I've had the proofs back, like a mock-up on paper. But we will have these available to purchase at the Northern Angling Show, and then after the Northern Angling Show they'll go onto our website, thecarpcast.com. So yeah, check it out. You can buy my knowledge DVDs on there as well, and we're looking at all sorts of stuff, thermal mugs, and what else are we thinking about, Mark? We're basically going to have lots of merchandise you can buy.
Yeah, should we try and source some P-line? That'd be a good one.
There's
for ourselves as well.
There's a chap been messaging me, actually, I forget, but they are now stockists of P-line.
Really?
I forget the chap's name. He's not got him in yet. He's going to message me when he's got him in.
Not that Moonfleet place, is it?
It's not, no, it's somebody else.
No, quite different.
But I've got the messages in my folder, but he's not ordered any bulk spools as yet, which is certainly all I'd be interested in buying. I actually need some now, so I need to do some searching. I need to hunt some down. And those 2,000 metre bulk spools, I mean, that'll do me a full season, that. But I have quite a lot of rods to make up, because I intend on doing a lot of fishing this year.
We know you fish with 6 or 7 at a time, so that's a lot of line.
Well, this is my point. I've got three snide rods.
No denial.
Yeah, I've got three snide rod setups on. I've got three of those 9-foot scopes, which 3.5 pound test curve. Like, they're 9-foot, and obviously they shrink down to like 6-foot. So they're very portable, good for fishing the rivers and stuff. The barbel fishing on the Ribble that's near me, good for fishing sneaky lakes, snide rods. It's just a nice setup to have. I've got two sets of buzzers, and Lord knows how many rods I've collected over the years.
I've just got a new set of buzzers as well this week.
I saw you've. Did you buy some MMXRs or something?
Legit, they're quality alarms. I've got 8 now and 2 receivers. Only one receiver works.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Two of the alarms are a bit dodgy.
Did you buy them second hand?
Oh yeah, they've been discontinued for God knows how long, and I think they're a cracking alarm, so I'm just stocking up.
Why didn't you get any R3s?
Because I've got MMXRs. I might do in the future at some point, I don't know, but I'm in that transition stage at the minute. I'm on new rods and new reels at the minute.
Yeah,
I might get totally new buzzers sometime in the future.
You're already blanking. You see, I want to add to it.
I've got a
curse of the new gear.
Yeah,
the anti-carps won't be happy with you.
No, I am the anti-carp. Yeah, I nearly broke into a Slayer song then, but I best not. That will drive all the listeners away.
So yeah, anyway, if you come into the Northern Angler Show, you can pay on the door, It's like I say, it's a week from when you'll hear this. Event City in Manchester. You can buy tickets online still, northernanglingshow.co.uk, or you can purchase tickets on the day. You can leave it to the last minute, whatever, and just tip up on the Saturday or Sunday. We're doing a live show, Carpcast Live, on the Sunday. But I'm hosting the stage all day on the Sunday as well, and we have a Carpcast stand where you'll be able to buy our woolly hats, our hoodies, and our t-shirts, all in three different sizes, medium, large, and Mark.
You've been waiting to say that all day, haven't you?
I, to be fair, extra large, I'll probably need one now. But yeah, they're all in black. There's Carp Gods Giveth, there's some hoodies. Carp Gods Giveth t-shirt, some hoodies, and the Carpcast black woolly hats. You can look well tricky. But yeah, come and see us at the show. While we're whoring ourselves out, we'd like to say thank you to DNA Bates, dnabates.com, who are also going to be at the Northern Angling Show. We had Jason on the show last week, one of the bait experts, explaining about various stuff that they got on there, telling us you're going to be able to buy the Switch exclusively, the first time you'll ever be able to lay your hands on it. You can do that, which is an HMV bait he was explaining last week, but you can do that at the show. And they have a massive stand there. But if you can't wait to the show, you can buy stuff off their website, dnabaits.com, and you can use the code CARPCAST5 at the checkout. You can get an extra 5% discount on all their post-free deals and everything they sell. The post-free deals are pretty decent. You can choose any of their boilies, the Secret 7, as we spoke about last week, SLK, the Ocean X, and the Switch will be coming soon. $59.99 for a 5-key deal, and you get loads of stuff with it. You get like pop-ups or wafters of your choice, matching pellets or stick mix, 3-key of, and 250ml of bait soak. The 5-key deal is $59.99 delivered. 10 key is $94.99 and 20 key is $149.99, and if you're stocking up for the spring, because it will soon be on us, 50 kilos is £320. With all those extra bits with it, it's post free, and if you use the code CARPCAST5 when you check out, you'll get an extra discount. They do other stuff as well. They do the Zig deal, and Zigs are super popular this time of year. The Zig deal, you get a bottle of sticky sweet liquid that they do, that everybody dips their foam in. You get 2.5 key of spod mix, and you get some Fox Zig aligners. It's £25, £30 delivered to your door. You can go extra for, or you can go large for an extra £5. They do fluoro pop-ups, so like a 5-tub deal is only £25. 5 different types and colours of pop-up. And use the code CARPCAST5 when you check out, and you will get stuff even cheaper.
Yes. I'm looking forward to your show, because I'm needing a lot of bait for this year. I'm intending to doing a lot of fishing like you, so I'll be around sniffing everyone's balls.
It's on the net. It must be true.
On the nets. Have you seen some stuff, Mark?
Yeah, there's one or two things going off. Let's start with a funny one first. Did you see it? A fella offering to get a tattoo of the Sticky Baits logo for 5 key of bait free.
I did see this, yeah. The guy, how did it start, the thread?
I don't know. I think he just posted a stick. I couldn't find it when I actually went back and looked for it, so I don't know if it's been deleted, but...
No, I did read it. I don't think it got deleted. Yeah. The guy basically said he would get a tattoo of the Sticky Baits logo if they gave him 5 key of bait. Now, 5 key of bait's worth, what, £50? Maybe slightly less? And it escalated from that to Sticky coming and saying, deal, we'll give you 20 key of bait and we'll pay for the tattoo. Which is extremely bad marketing, because the guy was going to pay for his own tattoo and do it for 5 kilo of boilie. But anyway, yeah, he's doing it for 20k. Well, 20 kilos of bait, and they're going to pay for it, and we await to see his Sticky Baits tattoo.
Yeah, do you think it'll actually happen?
Don't know. I've seen other anglers. I've seen a few people with Nash tattoos, you know, the Nash logo and the fish.
I've seen that
a few times.
Yeah, I've seen a few tattoos of that, and it's not just tattoos with the Nash logo. How many times have you seen it ripped off for somebody else?
Yeah, that logo's been used a lot, and I wouldn't say the Northern Angling Show logo looks dissimilar. It has a similar fish's head.
It is a fish, but you can tell it's not. I've never looked at your Northern Show logo and thought you've ripped Nashy off, but there's someone from Yorkshire, the start of one of these upstart clothing companies, and their logo was the Nash fish, and they just stretched it a bit. It's like, make an effort, please.
Yeah, our logo designer for the Angling Show is a top guy, YOLO, what they call YOLO something, but they do real high-end stuff. And we just gave him a brief, and like, he came up with that. He'd never even seen the Nash one, but yeah. He does like all the Radio 1 stuff, Radio 1 Extra, like all the electronic dance music artists, like Deadmau5, and you know, all the Dead. And you see an album cover for Ministry of Sound or anything like that, he's done it, or done the, you know, the TV ads and stuff, the moving graphics. He's pretty high end, but he didn't rip it off. He's not that sort of guy, but it has been ripped off all over the place, I guess. But it looks pretty cool, doesn't it? Cool enough to have as a tattoo? I'm not sure. Do you fancy anything? I've never even seen a really good fish tattoo, have you? Like a carp one. I've seen a few like really detailed ones on people's chests and stuff where they've got like a koi carp in them, you know, like the kind of Japanesey looking ones. I've seen a couple of nice ones of that, but the carp's not really the feature. But I've not seen any decent fishing ones.
Yeah, I've seen a few, and I'm sure we're going to get a few posted on our page now. But a lot of your Japanese koi designs, I've actually got one myself on my left thigh.
Yeah.
That's from the period when I was tattooing, and it was a bit of a practice doodle, which I'm glad it's on my thigh because I can cover it up easy. It's a bit of, it's not exactly a professional job, put it that way.
Yeah.
I'm sure there is. I could be wrong, but I'm thinking Dave Levy had one recently that was quite good. It might not have been Dave, but I'm sure it was some known angler had you know, quality, like a black and white shaded tattoo of a carp.
I can't remember, but if you have a decent fishing based tattoo, send it us. We want to see. Do you remember there was a guy a while ago I saw, he had like a swivel, like a hook link to a hook with a boilie on it, down his like forearm. Do you ever see that?
I think I did actually, yeah, and kind of did a shake head moment.
I
love fishing, I love tattoos, but you know, there's two seldom meet.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Have you seen anything else on the net?
It's on the net, it must be true.
Yes, the transfer market's been open. Big mover is Adam Penn, and he's gone to ProLogic. You seen that one?
Yeah, I did see that one. Adam's a top guy. Obviously, he left Corda last year, was it?
A couple of years ago now, maybe more.
Yeah, I don't know what other companies he's with. We should, though, really, because he's been on the show.
Sticky Baits.
Yeah.
And
ProLogic do what? Mainly luggage, don't they?
They do everything.
Waders, I know they do. I've had a set of them over the years.
Yeah, no, they really, they do everything. Rods, because it's the Svensson Group.
Ah, right.
They have ProLogic, Savage Gear, Akuma Reels, and you know, I think there's about half a dozen other brands as well.
Is he just ProLogic though? Is he under the Svensson logo?
I don't know. As far as I know, it is just ProLogic.
Yeah,
but the ProLogic brand is European. Their gear is geared towards the European market. And I think it's a fella called Enrico. He was over filming with Rick Johnson last year, I think it was, and couldn't believe how different the UK car tackle is and our approach to the European. And they want to crack the English market, British market. So to take someone like Adam Penning on, who's was instrumental in the start of ESP, worked for Fox, worked for Corda, I think it's only going to be good.
Yeah, it's a big name as far as somebody who's well known, like working within the industry as well as being a well-known angler, then yeah, he's probably I'm surprised he hasn't been snapped up sooner. He's obviously a top guy, he's a very good angler, he's very good with the public. You only got to look at his Twitter account, see how popular he is. So yeah, wish them both well.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, we work in a tackle shop myself. It's hoping the stuff comes through the doors, because some of it might not go out on the shelf.
So do we want to do some listeners' questions?
Yes, we've got a listeners' question coming up. I've put this one in. It's I think we've done something along these lines or very similar before, but
yeah, we've had, I'm reading the question now. We have had this before,
but it's something that's a lot of people are, it's going to come up again and again. So I'll just read it out from Sam Hubbard.
Ask us a question.
Says, how would you approach a low stock estate lake for wary old fish where night fishing is strictly banned? I know you, just night fish.
Yeah, just night fish for him. But I mean, if you're going to do it, I mean, how often is this going to come up? How often do you find low stock estate lakes that you can get on? I mean, there's a few around the Cheshire area when I was a kid, but I haven't come across any since, I've got to be honest. But yeah, I mean, you know, how would you fish anywhere? Fish are used, you know, fish that are not night fished for feed at night because they know that it's safe. Like if it's fished, if anywhere's fished in the day and not fished at night, then your key times are literally, you catch all your fish in the first hour and the last hour. You know, 99% of all the bites will come around that period. What can you do? You can make sure you're fishing 100% effectively during those times. You make sure your rods are rigged up, make sure everything's like instant. So the second you arrive in the morning, you're fishing within 30 seconds of plopping your gear in the swim. You know, and no disturbance whatsoever. I mean, it's all you can do. Get some bait in the night before. Try and fish multiple days in a row. So you last thing you do before you leave is put a load of bait out. And you know, get some rods on that spot within 30 seconds you've been allowed to fish in the morning.
Everything baited up, ready to go, your distance is clipped up.
Yeah, and you got to fish as effectively as possible, because you've probably got a 1 hour of peak time, like half an hour, the first half hour in the morning, the first half hour at night, and the rest of the time when conditions are good, you know, when you get them really moody overcast days, you know, them really like carpy days, you know, make sure you're fishing during those conditions, because the fish will get caught. I just think they, when conditions are so good, the fish just don't ignore it. Doesn't matter if it's day or night, when the conditions are mega, you'll get daytime. I've been on lakes where you're only getting bites at night, and then the conditions go sick in the daytime, and you get daytime bites. Just make sure you're fishing effectively at the key times, and if you can sneak a little bit of time on at night, whether that
that's
be just staying
very,
an extra,
very naughty.
Yeah, but it's been done, you know. Even just staying an extra hour can make the difference. Like, yeah, just 1 hour late at night. So, or bribe the owners. That's plan B, is go and find out what their favourite tipple is. Go and buy a really nice bottle of brandy and knock on the door with it. And it might be that once or twice a year you'll get a night.
Yeah, or you know, befriend the bailiffs, become a bailiff and say, I'll patrol this lake at night. I'll make sure nobody night fishes.
Yeah.
You'll
yeah, cool.
Patrolling with your rods.
Ask us a question.
And we have another from Mike O'Connell, who asks us a question. Hey, Jamie, got a question for Carpcast discussion. What effect are we having on the wildlife that there are that they are now seeing boilers as a main food source? And long term, could we be harming both them and our carp by overfeeding them and turning them into fat bastards? What do you think to that?
I'm in almost complete disagreement. Let's look at the, well, I use the parrot, the new record, as an example. That's not a fat fish. Now let's wind the clock back. Look at Peter Springate's Brace, a couple of quite fat fish from years back.
Chris Yates' 51-pound record. I mean, spawn bound.
Fat.
Extremely fat.
Yeah, there's been fat and thin fish from start to finish. So I think that is pretty much a null point.
I get his point, what he's saying, though. Like, I get the thought, you know.
Yeah, what effect are we having? And let's be honest, boilers are actually, you know, in the most part, are a good food source. So I don't think we're having a derogatory effect at all. When you think about all the other crap that we're putting into our ecosystem, and not just lakes, you know, everything that gets washed into lakes, you know, fertilisers, and I mean, that's probably the leading contributor to these ridiculous algae blooms a lot of lakes suffer.
Yeah, I agree that it's having no harm. Like, you've seen what happens if you feed, like, seagulls off with bread and stuff. I mean, you can really bloat, like, birds and stuff, but boilies doesn't seem to do it. You know, it's very hard to feed seagulls off with boilies. Same with the bird life. But basically, boilies, I mean, they're designed as the ultimate carp bait. You know, they're designed. You know, there's people that know about carp way more than me. You know, your Simon Scotts of the world and all the bait companies. They know what a carp needs for a balanced diet, mainly because of koi rearing. You know, the money's so big in the koi breeding and rearing that, you know, fish have been analysed and analysed and analysed, and they know exactly, just the same as we know with humans, you know, what your the perfect daily intake is of fat, protein, carbohydrate, you know, essential oils. We know the perfect balance for humans, and we also know it for fish. Have done for quite a long time now, and you know, boilies are designed to give the fish everything it needs, because you know, the natural thing is we want stuff that makes it, we want to eat stuff that makes us feel good. So yes, carp are getting bigger on boilies. There's no doubt that you know, boiler fed carp grow bigger than they do naturally, but I don't think it's that makes them fat.
Now, genetics make you fat or thin.
Yeah, and you know, and you know, we've, like you say, like male fish, big male fish still are big, but they don't have the big fat gut. They just, you know, the frame gets bigger. I mean, you take the fat lady as a classic example. That fish used to fluctuate between 12 and 14 pounds in a season. Now, it didn't. That 12 and 14 pounds wasn't its belly. Like, the whole fish got bigger and shrunk during the course of a year. I mean, you know, you had it at the lower end and I had it at the bigger end of its
I had it at its fighting weight.
Yeah, but like, when we compared the pictures, the wrist of the tail was bigger, the distance between its eyes and the top of its head was wider. You know, it wasn't just, I mean, and that was a fat fish. It wasn't just, yeah, the fat belly that got bigger. The whole fish got bigger, like in every proportion. And it did that naturally every single year. So I don't think the boilies are doing any harm. If anything, I think they're doing good. I know years ago, Gary Bayes used to put, I forget what it was, but he put an ingredient in their squid boilies that was some sort of treatment for ill fish. I forget the ingredient now, but I remember, I don't know if it went in because of the Annie getting ill on the Essex Manor, but basically their baits healed fish over the years. I know the Annie got really ill when it was tethered and stuff, and you know, went down to like 20 odd pound, and then you know, went on to hit 60 pound. It just got bigger and bigger and bigger after that. And I know they used to put stuff in that is basically almost a medicine for fish. You know, one of his ingredients, and again on the same thing that we want to eat things that make us feel good. It's like a natural reaction. If something's making us healthier or gives us more energy, or you know, we're gonna want it more. So I think quite the opposite. I don't think it's doing wildlife or the fish any harm whatsoever. Quite the opposite. I think it's probably giving them proteins and stuff that or it's making it more easily accessible for them to get. They'll still get all the nutrients that they need out of the lake, but it's just an easier way for them to get them, rather than, you know, digging their head into siltweed looking for bloodworm.
I've always thought of carp as opportunist feeders. They will take advantage of whatever food source is in front of them, be it bloodworm, fish fry, boilies, whatever. But do you remember years back, I'm going to get corrected, I know, on this one, but there was an article in Carp World called Killing Fields.
Yeah.
Remember it? About the use of really, really high oil baits and like glugging all your baits in fish oils on hare field. Yeah. So much. And the fish ate it all. They loved it. They lapped it up because it tastes nice. But it made a mill and some died.
I do remember, and when we get Kevin Nash on in a little while, he mentions a little bit about bait and stuff, touches on this. Now's a good time to take a little break.
Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under the Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a wait. The fish, of course.
If you're thinking of going on holiday this year to France, maybe, as lots of carpers do, Mark and I are going to Saint-Armand-Leger, which is a beautiful four-bedroomed farmhouse, 4.5-acre spring-fed lake in France. We're going the last week of March, like Easter week. You can get two families in there easy. I mean, there's four double bedrooms in the farmhouse. It's like a games room, table tennis table, all sorts of bait freezers. Normal facilities in the kitchen, you know, like big cooker and log burner. Pretty much everything you need. You can take a couple of families there, have four or five people on the lake. It's a runs water, it's stuffed full of fish. Friends of ours went last year and they were getting 10 fish a day, just fishing daytimes. They weren't even fishing at night. And this fish to £50, I'm hoping that one of us catches one of the bigger ones while we're there. We're going to be doing a Carpcast live from there. It's just a beautiful little village. You can see the whole area from a video that's on our Carpcast page. We'll have to bump it up because they've done like a drone video of the farmhouse, the little village, French, proper traditional French village that it's in, and the whole lake. You can see the fish look amazing on there, and like I say, there's everything. There's a two comfortable double swims and four single swims on the lake. The house has got four double bedrooms, big farmhouse kitchen, hundreds and hundreds of fish in there, and all the facilities you could ever need. It's only £850 for a week. Now that's ridiculous. You could technically have 12 people there if you wanted. You know, three pairs of people fishing and all the kids and family and stuff in the farmhouse. It's got satellite TV, it's got leather sofas, all the usual stuff in the kitchen. And it's £850. It's too cheap, I think. Too cheap. And it probably won't be that cheap again, because I know because of these adverts on here, they have filled up. We wouldn't be telling you to go anywhere. We wouldn't go ourselves, and we are going, and we will hopefully have tales of lots of carp at the end of this month. I'm sure we'll do an in-session feature, won't we, on there?
Without a doubt.
And probably do a Carpcast feature on the bank as well. A couple of our friends are going with us. We hope to have a really good week, and hopefully the weather will be sunny by then. Like I said, it's a bit of a gamble at the end of March. It could be snowing, or it could be 26 degrees. We don't really know. But if you fancy going, there are a few weeks left. You can contact Lee on his UK mobile 07854 857 374. Or you can get Chris on his UK mobile 07428 183 018. They are the owners of the lake. They've had it a good few years now. They do own other lakes in France, and Chris is Christophe from Martin Clark's first book. He is a French guy himself, although he sounds like he's from Luton, because that's where I met him, near there. They know everything there is. He can answer all your questions. So give him a call, have a look at the website www.saintamandleisure.com. It will be in the show notes, so you can just click on it, or you can email him at saintamandleisure@yahoo.co.uk. And it's not going to be that price after this year, I wouldn't have thought, because I don't think they expected the demand that they've had from this. They've never really pushed this lake in the past. You know, they've only ever had a few people use it each year, and they've decided to advertise it this year because it's stunning. If you have a look at the drone video that's on our page, you will agree. And it's a great holiday. You're going to catch a lot of fish. You're not going to catch a 70 pounder, but they are getting bigger now. I think there was over 10 40s 3 or 4 years ago when they last kind of did the website update, and our pal Roger Bacon was there last year. He had fish to 48, I think, and I'm pretty sure there's 50s in there now. But it's well stocked. You're going to catch a lot of fish, and I don't think it's going to be that cheap for two families to go on holiday to France with a house, with all those facilities, and fishing on your own private lake. 850 quid is an absolute steal. And it won't be like it for long, so get yourself in this year before it goes massive, because I think it's going to in the future. Give Lee or Chris a call or check out the website, and next month we will have a full update on the place itself. A little feature we introduced a while ago is something you never see in magazines, just because of the way the industry works. And you don't particularly want to upset people, but we are fairly independent. We do have sponsors, but we're pretty opinionated, so we're always going to give you the truth. And so we did a feature called True Review, where if something crops up, we're going to tell you what we actually think of it.
True Review.
If someone does want to send us a box load of free stuff, we will be grateful.
Yep, but if it's not very good, we're probably going to tell people, so it's not in your interest to send us something that's got faults.
Yeah. No, we are going to be reviewing a product here I've actually purchased. I've purchased one. I'm hoping to find someone that people have cracked off as well during the course of the season.
And there has been a bit of controversy about this product. Do you want to tell us what it is?
It's a Fox Impact Spod that we all waited with bated breath a year for. After they were first publicised by Fox, I think there was a few issues in getting it out to market, but it's here. I've got one. You own one or two. And we've both used it, so you're going to get our opinions, and everyone is entitled to our opinion.
Well, let's first of all go into what's been said on the net. I mean, they're very nice looking things, very sleek. I've got the orange Fox colours. I've only used a medium one, but I've seen countless pictures on the internet of the scoop arm that kind of seals it up. There's like a pin that goes through the pivot where it opens and closes, and I've seen many pictures of pinless spods. So there clearly has been an issue. I'm told that the issue is only one batch out of lots of batches, and it seems to have affected the southern part of the country. Now, we live up north. Everyone I've spoke to up north has said they're great. I've heard stories about the reps going into shops and replacing pins further down south. Now, as with all reputable companies, if there is a problem with something, you can always send it back. So we are aware that there has been an issue with some people's bombs, but assuming that is something that's going to be rectified, if it already hasn't, and certainly you can send it back if you do happen to have one of the ones where the pins come out. But I can only say the one that I've got in front of me, and you can only say about the one you've used, and mine's been great. I like it. It flies like a dart.
Yeah, I've had no complaints whatsoever. So it's, well, does what it says on the tin.
It's a spom.
Yeah,
it's basically a spom that you can fill with one hand, which I do like that bit about it.
There's some slight differences in performance between a impact spod and a spom. Although I'll just get to what you just said about filling it with one hand, which I think is great. Now, I did see someone make a video review of it, and they were having a bit of a complaint because they were filling it with the maggots and stuff. And if a maggot strayed and was sat on the little clip mechanism at the front, it wouldn't close properly. And this was his whole point, and he demonstrated it a couple of times. And, well, all I can say to that is, no shit, Sherlock. Don't get a maggot on that clip.
I was filling it with one hand. And, the whole point is, you don't want to have to put the rod down, do you? I mean, that's so, if you're normal right-handed, you reel in, you swing the spod, spom, whatever it is, in towards you, and you use your left hand, you scoop it into your bucket, and then what I do then is, still with my rod in my hand, hand around the reel and stuff, Like, I then close the lid or, you know, pack it down if it's a spud, whatever it is. I do that with the other hand. Now, I still don't need to put my rod down or anything, to just use a finger, brush anything away that's round the bloody pivot point, you know, where the lid shuts. Just move anything away with your index finger, your right hand that's sticking out from your reel, and, you know, shut it up and cast it. The whole point is you don't want to have to put your rod down, which you had to do with the spombs. Like with a normal spom, you kind of have to put your rod on the floor every time to fill it, don't you?
Yeah, I just kind of stuck it between my legs.
You don't have to with these. I mean, it's common sense. If you see something around the bit blocking it from shutting, you can move it with your finger. It doesn't mean you have to put the rod down. So I think it still does what it says on the tin. You can still fill it with one hand without having to put your rod down.
Yeah. When I was using it, I was using a mix with, you know, lots of corn in it, you know, lots of chopped boilies, you know, even put a bit of ground bait in. And a couple of times I did get stuff caught in the clip and it wasn't shutting, but a quick blow the stuff out and then it shuts. Simples.
Yeah, that's what I did. I blew it out a couple of times. I was using just a hemp ground baity type boily mix.
Yeah, I think
just blew it out of the way.
But like I said, the differences between the impact spot and the spot I found in performance. Mm. Now, I told you this the other day and you just called me tight. Now, when I'm spomming and I have the occasional wayward cast, I will land the spom on the water kind of like sideways, so I'm like almost bringing it back just the moment it lands so it doesn't open. It's not getting that impact. Then my spom comes back full of bait and is recast, and I'm not spreading bait all over the swim. Although with the impact spot, you don't seem to be able to do that. The way the button, it kind of sticks out like a nipple. Basically,
I would suggest that's a design fault of the spom, the fact that you can stop it from opening, which means if it hits a clip wrong or doesn't hit the clip, I've had the spoms not open when I want them to open.
Yeah, I was going to say that's the flip side of the coin. Last year on hiking, I was doing a bit of distance fishing and spomming a distance. I've had a couple of times where I've got a good chuck and it's gone straight, it's landed bang on the spot and the spom has not opened. Yep. That won't happen with a spod, impact spod.
No. It's just a bonus, the fact that if you get a wayward cast, you can kind of angle the spom to stop it opening. I mean, wouldn't say it's a negative point of the impact spod that it opens every time it hits the water. You know, I'd say learn to cast a bit better.
You know? Oh, thanks. No, I blame the crosswind. But I do also recall watching you, this is back in the days of the spod, on St Ives Lagoon, spotting out to your marker float from the work swim, and it was as if there was a force field around your marker float because you could not get anywhere near it. And the more you did it, the more frustrated you got, and the more I just laughed behind you.
Spread baiting.
Unintentional spread baiting.
But so, is that it? Is that all you got to say in the spom?
It does what it says on the tin.
True Review.
We mentioned last week that we are teaming up with Carp Talk. I was hungover last week and got tongue-tied quite a lot between Carp Talk and Carp Cast. That shouldn't happen this time. But yeah, Carp Talk used to be the weekly Bible for me, especially younger. If you wanted to keep track of fish, you know, pre-social media days, you had to have that magazine to find out how lakes are fishing, you know, to track growth weights of fish and stuff. And they're still out there, still pretty much the only weekly magazine. And they have a digital version of their magazine that comes out on a Saturday, same day that you hear this. Digital version's only £1.49 and is available from pocketmags.com. You can view it on like your Apple device, Android or PC. Or MacBook, I guess, as well. The print version comes out in shops on a Tuesday, and you can see where your local shop is or order it from the stockist locator, which is on the Carp Talk website. But just tell us about some stuff that's in this week's, Mark.
Lots of fish coming out. It's been a mega winter this year. Got a full story of Adam Smith's incredible 18 fish hit from Christchurch on Linshill. Also got the story of 7 different 40s from Linear Fisheries in 6 days.
I saw that, yeah. Wow. All the big ones were out of manner, weren't they? Basically, the weather wasn't quite as good last week, but it was a new moon. And so many fish got caught. I mean, there was 50s from all over the place.
Jim from Frying in at 53.5.
Yeah, we mentioned last week that Lynch Hill was fishing its head off. We are doing a Carpcast social on Christchurch in October. More info on that later. But yeah, if you want to come fish with us on the famous Christchurch, I mean, the fish in there are stupid big at the minute. I've lost count of how many mid-40 commons are in there. One of our pals, Miles, had 3 different 40 commons, then had another 40 afterwards. 4 consecutive bites, I think, pretty much. But yeah, what else is in there? The frying's been throwing them up, hasn't it?
Yeah, and Chris Ball pays tribute to the legendary carper Chris Haswell, who sadly passed away, age 63.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, there's got some features in. We've got When It All Comes Good. That's big carp ace John Claridge recalls a session on farriers. We just mentioned him, Miles Gibson, Cold Weather Success. He's been having plenty of that lately.
Yeah, he's been having a lot, hasn't he, out of Christchurch. Spoiler alerts, fishing gets head off.
Yeah, then we've got Winter on the Railway, which is a historic Lincolnshire water. And Tom Denton.
I saw him posting stuff about that place on Facebook, actually. I don't know anything about the railway, do you know?
Yeah, it's been around for a long, long time. Some lovely old fish in there. And I don't particularly know Tom. I have met him once or twice, but I know of him around. He's a quality angler. That's some good fish.
He has, yeah, from a lake we won't name that, you know, probably might end up fishing one day, and we'll certainly pick his brains about when I do.
Good luck.
Yeah, I've seen the pictures. I've been grooming him for a while. I've been liking his posts on Facebook, yeah. I'll get the info one day. I'll get the info. But yeah, then there's competitions in there as well in this week's Carp Talk for Avid Carp Terabyte bed chairs to give away, worth £130 each. Check it out, all the weekly news and gossip. Only £1.49 for the digital version. Pocketmags.com comes out on a Saturday. Get it to any device, or you can wait till Tuesday, 3 days later, and have a hard copy of it from your local stockist.
Yeah, so you can take your iPad fishing, have the latest Carp Talk to read on the weekend while listening to the Carpcast.
That is true. Yeah, that is true. Do it. Carp Talk's been around for years, and we love all the people that were there.
Yes, lovely people. We're moving on for some Top Trumps. This was a good reintroduction last week.
Yeah, people seem to like it. We reintroduced Top Trumps, decided to do day ticket venues for a bit, and we may vary it up after a bit. But place that our first Carpcast social ever is on. What are the dates for that, Mark? Is it the 8th to the 10th of April, is it?
8th, 9th, 10th of April.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of places left on that, and they have nearly all gone. Yeah, but
only a couple.
Yeah, there are only a couple. Doesn't mean you'll get a crappy peg. There are 18 pegs on the lake, and we are taking 15 people. So there is plenty of room. Nobody will be in a dodgy area. We're going to provide food. All weekend we're going to get Chinese and Indian, loads of it on the Friday. We're going to give you breakfast Saturday and Sunday morning, like bacon rolls, balms, or whatever bread rolls are called in your area. Bacon and sausages in the mornings, and then fired up barbecues are providing a really good scram for us on the Saturday night. www.firedupbarbecues.com for all your barbecue needs. They come to the place, they have a mega setup that they do, and provide some really good food, and we're going to be eating it all. But you can book them for any event you have. www.firedupbarbecues.co.uk. I think there's a link to it on our Facebook page as well. And we provide all the beers as well. We'll have a few beers on the Saturday night. Fish to £48. Rose has just done the late record, and they won't have spawned by the time we get on there, so who knows, there could be a 50 in there. But either way, there's 10-40s, about 60-30s, and loads and loads of 20s. Almost every bite's 20 plus, and it's probably got the best facilities you'll ever see on any lake anywhere. As we're going to find out, because I'm going to do it in one of our venue Top Trumps. Message me or Mark if you would like to come on one of the socials, Cromwell being the first one in April, and like I say, I'm not sure, maybe 3 places left, maybe 4 at a push, Mark, something like that.
We're down to 2 or 3, definitely.
Are we? Okay, cool.
Yeah,
cool. So yeah, get in quick if you would like a place on that.
Cap Top Trumps.
I'm going to pick Cromwell as my venue this week.
I thought you would.
There's been a bit of a steward's inquiry about last week, mainly because I was hungover and couldn't add up. On one of the points, I added 26 and 8 and made 32, which was 34, which I think that would have put us even, wouldn't it, if I'd have added up correctly.
I don't know, but what's done is done. The result is final. I won.
No, it's a draw. The first one was a draw, and it should be less than a draw because somebody pointed out in a message that the price for Bluebell Swan, which was your chosen lake, the day ticket price was $32.50. Shouldn't have been a seven. Bear in mind, the cheaper it is, the higher it scores. With $32.50 being one of the most expensive day ticket lakes around, that is true. 32 is on the higher side, and had I thought of that, there are lakes more expensive than 32 quid. There's a number that I know of, it shouldn't be really low, that score. But with the majority of decent day ticket lakes being 25 to 30 quid, I think a 7 probably was too high. So I actually should have won, I think. But I don't want to...
You're coming across like a sore loser now. Well, you're making all excuses.
I don't want to change scores. Like, I'm not... I'm going to let
you're like
you
a Man United fan. Oh, you are.
No. I'm going to let you keep the score because I don't agree with changing scores. But the fact that I added them up wrong, I mean, that's just a clerical error. I mean, that we haven't altered anything. It was a draw. So it's still 0-0, as far as I'm concerned. But I should have won it if I'd have been a bit more sharp last week. Just the fact that I wouldn't have given you a 7 for price. But anyway, let's move on.
So if you're going to take Cromwell, I know how much you love Cromwell, and you're going to try and give yourself 11 for every round. So
I'll be honest, I'm unbiased. You know, it's a fantastic venue, but I like lots of venues.
You know. I'm not unbiased. Let's be honest.
I absolutely love Swan, and we'll be going back to Swan this year at some point.
Yeah, unbiasm is boring. Is that a word?
Unbiasm, no. Yeah, it's not.
It is now.
Yeah, unbiased is a word.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure that's what you meant. Right, come on then, Cromwell. Right. So we're going to mark these out of 10. Five categories: the lake record, the stock, overall stock of carp, the difficulty to catch said carps, the amenities, and the price. Have you got a pen? Because I can't see one around.
No, I've got my phone in front of me.
I'll grab a letter and a marker pen. Here we go.
Bill.
Mark, Jamie. Right, you go first. You're on the left. So, the lake record of Raisbury.
Yes.
And I don't care about historic records because it wasn't a day ticket lake then. We're looking at what you get now, today, for your money.
Yes, I've taken Raisbury 1 because I think it is an awesome day ticket gaff and I really, really need to get down and fish it. The lake record is currently King Fungus at 48 plus.
Okay, 48 is an impressive carp for a day ticket lake, so you can have what?
£56.6 historically.
Yeah, we don't care about
the tiebreaker.
We don't care about historic because you're not getting £56 when you pay your money. So £48. I happen to know Rosie has just been out of Cromwell, and £48 is that. So it's going to be even, whatever the scores. I mean, a 7 or an 8, what would you say? It's got to be an 8, really, isn't it, for both?
I think it's an 8, and I get an 8.5 due to the historical tiebreak.
Well, you know, that could come under under another category, but no, you don't get any more points for that.
Cool. Let's try.
Right, the overall stock of carp.
Go on, tell us all about Cromwell.
Well, I do happen to know about Cromwell. There's approaching 1040s in there now. A couple of upper 40s. There is at least 60-30s. At least. And it's about 18 acres. And I would say there was probably 250 to 300 carp plus the stockies. Nathan has a stocking program there every winter. They put some in. I don't think they bought any for about 3 years, but I reckon there's probably another 100, 150 stockies. There might be 400 fish in there total. So quite an impressive stock. But I mean, approximately, like, when you get a bite, it seems to be about one in three fish is a 30 pounder or better.
What's your average?
Yeah, I've been really unlucky. I had 130 for my first 30 bites out of there, maybe more. It was a nice one. It was £38. It was particularly nice. I did lose a definite 30 off the top, a couple of springs ago. In fact, it was one of them really hot. It was in March and it was red hot. It was like 26, 27 degrees. And then I got them going. But anyway, I've watched people have six in a row, all 30s. I've been unfortunate with sizes, but I would say it's well stocked, but it's certainly not a, well, we'll go into difficulty afterwards. So what about Raspberry One, do you know the stock in there?
Well, I've been reading on the Arcade Ledger website and we're looking at 500 plus carp, yeah, you know, including some of the old guard which are still there, which is common carp to 44 plus and mirror carp to 48.
How big's the lake?
It's about 40 acres, the North Lake.
So the stocking densities are probably quite similar then, I would say, for fish per acre.
Yeah, I think they are, but I think I need to be a point ahead of you on this.
Why is that?
Because this has what Cromwell doesn't, and that is 40 plus commons.
Yeah, I mean, there is a big common Nathan sees every spawning time. Just doesn't get caught. That's certainly around that size, but it just doesn't get caught. And, Nathan's no reason to lie. He sees it every year. He's been wading in the water with them in previous years. Give Cromwell, what, an 8 and you a 9?
Yeah, that'll do me. I think there's fish, you know, old historical raspberry fish like the floppy tail common and obviously king fungus, you know, still around.
Yeah, there's a few real classic fish in there as well, isn't there? Okay, difficulty.
Yeah. I think this is going to be a draw. I think tricky but not impossible covers them.
I've seen like Kev Hewitt and stuff. I mean, Kev Hewitt seems to hammer everywhere, but I've seen Kev like have, you know, 10, 12, 20 fish sessions on Yateley. There is a guy that's fishing Cromwell at the minute, seems to keep having them type of hits, fishing very similar methods. So
I think both lakes can chuck up big hits and then they can be cruel and be kind.
Okay. I mean, Cromwell is not easy. It fishes more like a syndicate, you know. It's not a guaranteed catch day ticket lake at all, far from it.
And I've got to be honest, with Raspberry, I'm going on what I've read about it is not somewhere I've ever fished. I've walked around it once back in its syndicate days, and after passing the third burnt out car, I did a U-turn and got back to my car before that joined them.
Yeah, I walked around it with Jim Shelley when we did his first book, Mary.
You couldn't resist that.
I've been waiting to do that. But he told me the history in each peg. It was pretty interesting. We walked around, sat in each peg for a little while, told me the stories of that peg, and we saw his mate Marky Mark on there, who was fishing. I actually slept the night, didn't fish, but slept the night on the lake. It's a pretty magical place. I'm looking forward to going back. We shall go back, maybe even do a Carpcast social on there at some point. But we need to go and check it out first, don't we? Try and catch.
Definitely need to do an in session.
Right, let's give them both a 7, I think. A 7. Okay, amenities.
Amenities. Go on. Start with Crummers.
Cromwell has to be, for any lake I've ever been to in my life, if ever a lake's a 10 out of 10 for anything, amenities is what Cromwell will get it on, because there's everything. You go in through an electric gate, you buzzed in, it's completely secure, nice car park, there's an angler's, it's not even a lodge, it's a bloody brick built building that's got showers in it, you know, proper showers. The bathroom's like a bathroom at home, better than a lot of bathroom, you know, home bathrooms that I've seen. There's, you know, charging points in there for your phones, you know, for a good quite a few people leave their bait boats on charge, their phones, their laptops. There's microwave in there, there's kettles, all sorts of cutlery, plates, everything, free tea and coffee. You know, the milk's replaced every single day. There's a fridge and freezer for bait and food. You just couldn't ask for any more. And there's a little tackle shop in there as well, just for, you know, leads and bait and, you know, emergency stuff. Yeah, it's not quite got the tackle shop of Bluebell, but it's a tackle shop that's got, you know, most stuff if you run out or forget things, you know, prepared particles and loads of boilies and hook baits, end tackle. You know, you're not going to buy a bed chair or a set of alarms you know, a couple of shops I've seen, like the Farlow's one and Bluebell, but it's got all your emergency gear, gas, stuff like that. So, I mean, it's got to be a 10 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm just trying to find somewhere to pick it apart, but it doesn't really fail anywhere.
No, on amenities, it's got everything you could possibly need, you know, and it's cleaned every morning. It's cleaned, like the shower, the floor's mopped every day. Like, it's immaculate every time you set foot in there.
Can you order a Thai massage with extras?
You probably can. I mean, there's a notice board. They've spent quite a lot of money on the mapping, you know, the contour mapping. There's maps of that in the lodge. There's all sorts of takeaway stuff with postcodes, directions to the local fishing shop, which is up the road in Newark. I mean, you couldn't be looked after anymore there. So, anyway, go on. What's Rage we got?
Well, this is what I found on the website for amenities. State-of-the-art facilities and security systems are currently being installed at the Raisby venue. On arrival, fishermen will drive to the secure car park and on signing in, will be issued with a security card for the duration of their stay. Once checked in, guests will be driven to their swims by our very own buggies.
Hmm.
Which sounds like a work in progress. I'm sure when the facilities are there, they will be as good as Cromwell's.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. I mean, you can also get swim delivery on Cromwell for about £2 each way or something, I think, as well. But yeah, but what is there now? Is there toilet, showers?
I haven't been there, to be honest, so I can't guarantee. But on the sake of this argument, yes.
Right, you need to give me some facts if you want more than a 7 here.
All right, then you can borrow the Horton Lodge down the road, which has everything times 10.
All right, 7. okay, and finally, the price.
What the price? Raisby 1, we're going on the same 24 hours for 3 rods, £35.
Okay, which is dearer than Bluebell last week. We gave Bluebell a 7, so you can have a 6 for that. Cromwell is £30 for 24 hours, and it does get cheaper for every 24 hours you have, but I suppose our rules are price per for a single 24 hours, isn't it? So it's Cromwell, it's like it's £30 for 24, and it comes down for 48, I think. But anyway, it's £30 for 24, which is got to be an 8, I think. So I don't need to add these to know that you didn't beat me in any category. You had a few draws, and I was 3 ahead in the amenities and 2 ahead in the price, which makes me the winner, and I don't even have to use any maths. I win.
It's just as well, because you can't add up.
I couldn't.
As last week proved.
For sure, yes. So it's now 1-0. Thank you. Retired. Yeah,
although.
Cap. Top trumps.
I've got to be honest, I do enjoy Cromwell, but I need to have a trip down to Raisby.
Ah, listen, you know, we're not saying what's the best fishery in the country here. We're scoring them all. I mean, there's not a lake we've talked about that I don't want to fish yet, including last week. So. You know, there are many. We should do an overall tally, you know, and actually do a top 10 at the end of the year for, you know, who finished highest and lowest. But, I mean, they're all lakes that you want to fish anyway. We're not going to pick any that, you know, we wouldn't want to go to.
I'll tell you what we should do.
Yeah.
In time for your Northern Angling Show 5 next year, Capcast Awards in every category.
Yeah, can do. Maybe we'll get an award one day, but there are no categories for carp fishing podcasts because there's only
number one carp fishing podcast.
Yeah, in a category of one, we win. Thanks.
That's it. Thank you. Round of applause.
Yeah, cool. What else have we got to do? We're nearly it for today, aren't we?
We're nearly done.
We have the legend, Mr. Nash, coming up. But if we just recap some stuff, Northern Angling Show, northernanglingshow.co.uk. You can get tickets for the next few days. And it is next weekend. And it is, you can buy tickets on the door, only a tenner. Under 12s are free. The Carpcast Live is on. There's Matt Hayes and Mick Brown. Holmes is there. All the big brands are there. Go to the Northern Angling Show Facebook page and you can see everything you need to go. There's loads of promo videos up there at the minute. There's a video of the stage going up. From last year, the big video screen that we have. It's an amazingly produced show. So get down there, come and see the Carpcast stand, come and see Carpcast live on stage with Frank Warwick on the Sunday, pick yourself up a few bargains and just be there for a pretty decent show. Grab your Carp Talk this weekend. It comes out on Saturday, the digital one, only £1.49. You can grab that and check out our new website and subscribe to the Carpcast Extra. You can find details about the socials. Like I say, this week's Carp Top Trumps winner was Cromwell, and you can come and fish there with us.
Check out the website at www.thecarpcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.
Till then, we hope you enjoy Kevin Nash. Spoke to him at length in two separate pieces as well. You'll hear the difference in the phone call to when I was actually sat with him. But there was loads of good info, so I'll just put it all out. Enjoy the one and only Mr. Kevin Nash. So I'm sat in Essex, in Rayleigh or Hockley, on probably one of the most hallowed lakes in the country, which is the Copse Lake, with the legend himself, a true legend of UK carp fishing, Mr. Kevin Nash. How are you doing, Kev?
I'm doing great. I haven't been a bit embarrassed by your description of me. I just catch a few carp.
Listen, you're an icon of the UK carp scene, you know, from making carp sacks on a sewing machine at home to having one of the largest carp fishing companies in the world probably these days.
Single brand, it probably is.
Yeah, and without doubt, probably I say at the peak, but you improve every year as well. I mean, you know, never has the Nash name been associated with quality. Right from the top of the range to the bottom of the range, it's been super stable for years. It's been going up through a recession. We've come out of a recession. There's new products coming out all the time, and I don't know, it just seems every year you surpass your own standards.
Well, to be honest, we did have that period in the mid-2000s when China senior, as I call it, doors open to China and everyone went into the factories and was copying this, you know, lower quality. And yeah, so our sales are here and we followed them down on price, but of course it's going to be lesser quality. But we were criticised by Nash fans, you know, because the quality went, but well, it's half the price, mate. But they never saw that, you know. But, you know,
I think
when we made the decision that, you know, we was just going to design and make proper tackle again, and that was the price, and let the angler decide, that was, you know, that was the turnaround.
I think what happened then is you were one of the first companies to go to China. This is from somebody from the outside looking in, and to go into the mass production. Carp angling got bigger, people wanted stuff cheaper, and what happened is maybe the quality dropped in that period, but every other company went through what you went through then since. So I've seen it. People say it about other companies that were all handmade in the UK, and they've had the same problems.
No, Jim, that's actually not what happened. You know, when I went into the factories, the big one for us was finding the factory that could give us our quality. You know, for example, it was 3 years before we got a bivvy out of one factory. It took me 3 years to get the quality. You know, but what happened was, and specifically JRC, he went in, for example, and copied our over umbrella at half the price because it didn't have the quality. And no surprise, our sales just dropped through the floor. And, you know, this is about, I had to pay, you know, when you have a business, you've got families to keep. You know, we've got 80 staff, so, you know, that's one of the things I'm most proud about. You know, we keep 80 families going, so yeah. We had no choice but to follow that down, and it was a black time in fishing history. You know, we wouldn't have survived if we hadn't followed it down, but it hit the bottom. People realised that, hey, you know, you pay your money for the quality you get, and so we went up on that rise, and we never will go back there.
Yeah. I mean, people know now that lots of stuff is manufactured abroad, and I guess because you did it early on as well, you probably found the best factories out there now. You've got things the way you want it. By trial and error, I guess.
You see this thing, oh, it's rubbish, it's made in China, UK. I was actually one of the last to get out of England. And we never really got out of England because of price. We got out because we couldn't take machinists on anymore. Women didn't want to do work like that. They wanted to stand behind perfume counters, so we couldn't get staff. So we had to go to China. But I can tell you, the quality we get out of China, I never achieved in England. Never. Right. Yeah, it's amazing quality. But the key point is, it's half the price.
Yeah.
If it was made in England, even. So why would you buy something with no advantage in quality for twice the money because it's made in England? I don't get it.
It's a really interesting, philosophical view on how the landscape's changed. Anyway, with the job people want to do. I mean, people complain about Europeans taking the UK jobs and stuff, but they're taking jobs that we don't want to do.
It's so right.
Supermarkets and chambermaids in hotels, and like you say, all the girls want to stand behind, wearing designer clothing in Debenhams behind counters now, don't they? In the old days, I mean, you look back to some of them war programs where all the women were in factories making stuff for the armies and
all chopping down trees.
Yeah.
All working down mines. The Lady Land Army aren't really noted. But I don't want to get into politics, but I've often observed that when unemployment hits about 1.5 million, that is full employment.
Right.
Yeah, because it's hit 1.5. What that means is 1.5 million people that don't want to work. Really, or can't,
or don't want to do the menial jobs that they, for minimum wage. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, really, because you're somebody who's, I would say, has beaten life. You've got the grade A. You've started a business that's become a brand. A global brand. I'm speaking to one of your work experience guys who's from South Africa over here, and I'm asking him about fishing over there, and he says, Nash is a big name over there, but he's working on it with you. And I mean, that's the opposite side of the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that obviously all of Europe and, we have an American following with this show. Our second most listened to country outside of the UK for the Carpcast is the US of A.
And Facebook's big as well.
Yeah, and we've actually had, we did an American show where we had three chaps from America. Mm. One of them owns one of the biggest mail order carp firms over there, and that they buy tackle from the UK. They have, I think, the tackle box, or someone ships it over to them. I said to him, why are you not speaking to the companies direct? Why are you not speaking to Kevin Nash, buying direct off him rather than the tackle shop? But he's pretty busy over there. It's the catch and release. It is catching on over there. Still people bowfish these big carp, but they've got some fantastic untapped fishing.
South Africa's real hardcore. There's at least, there's one club with 3,000 hardcore carp anglers. But the problem with South Africa is we just can't crack distribution. We've got so many fans. That guy you're talking about, he's doing his work experience. He told me when he arrived, he sold his set of S5 alarms for £200.
Wow! Because
they really want the Nash gear, but we just can't sort distribution out for them.
That's my point. You've got a guy from South Africa who's come to do his work experience in a freezing cold Essex on the opposite side of the world. He was saying it's 35 degrees back at home at the minute, and it was probably 3 degrees here last night, but You've put yourself from hand sewing carp sacks to having a complex of lakes people would give the right arm for, a beautiful house and a worldwide brand. I mean, you've beaten life, but you've got a very realistic view on the world, you know, and how. So I love the philosophical chats with you because you're somebody who kind of gets it, you know. You see things from a higher perspective because you've not just plodded on. You've not been beaten. You've overcome every obstacle that's been plonked in your way. Certainly business wise. I know we've had the emotional chats about women over the years and stuff, but
as you say, Jamie, yeah, it's getting it, isn't it? And
it's not being beaten, being prepared to work for it as well.
Yeah, there's so many people, you know, who just think that life owes them, you know, a living, you know, and you know, and so they're so just don't get it. You know, the only way I've got them is by work and sacrifice.
Sacrifice is the key thing as well. Even the same as being a successful angler. You know, the people look at, you know, people they deem to have a dream life, the full-time anglers. I mean, there's none of them about, really. Maybe Terry Hearn's possibly the only one. But people have to work. Nothing's for nothing. You have to do shows. You have to travel. And just having that work ethic of going out there. I mean, I look up to you as an angler, but I look up to you more as a human being who's achieved so much.
You speak of the company, what it's achieved, but you know, let's point out, which I hope might be an aspiration for other people. I left school with zero qualifications. Yeah, and for the last 2 years, I used to bunk off at lunchtime after the register to go fishing.
Yeah,
I didn't get it then. I am in no way particularly bright and intelligent. No way. You know, but I just had determination and a desire to get the best out of my fishing and a desire really to do the best in whatever I do in life, you know, and work hard. If that means 16 hours a day, you know, which I've done for a long time and now Alan Blair is also doing, then, you know, anyone can do it. You know, you haven't got to go to university, you haven't got to have an IQ of 150, you just need focus and determination.
Yeah, I think finding a niche as well that you're really interested in. I mean, so many people that do jobs that they just hate, you know, that they have no interest in at all. And I think we're all lucky to try and make a career out of something that we want to do. You know, you don't wake up in the morning thinking, I hate fishing, you know. It's
really
something
you... Yeah, I was in engineering for 10 years or so, and I hated every day, and that's really what, you know, focused me to get out and follow, you know, my passion for fishing and, you know, make a living out of it, you know. But I absolutely also believe that every human being on the planet has a gift.
Yes,
and you know, and that is just latching onto that gift, whether you're artistic or whatever, or musically gifted like you are, and then just trying to find a way of, you know, making it work for you.
That's the tough bit, is finding a way to earn money out of something that you enjoy. And there's so many people doing jobs that they hate, and they might have talents. It does take balls to, you know, just I've made financial sacrifices to have a main goal, and the goal has been is to do the things that I want to do, to get up at the time of day that I want to get up, to go to bed at the time of day I want to go to bed, you know, and to not be beaten down by the establishment or the system.
But it took me 4 years to go full time, and so, you know, I started Happy Hooker, working all the hours outside of a 40-hour job. It took me 4 years to make the move. Because, you know, you've got mortgages and commitments, and all I will say, if you haven't got a woman in tow, it gets a lot easier. So I was lucky in a way that I've been divorced, so my house became my factory, and I didn't have the commitment of, you know, of that with a woman around me. You know. But yeah, it does take courage to make that step for anyone.
It's tough. My advice to anyone listening to this is try and find something that makes you happy. If you dread going to work, if you have that sinking feeling every morning when the alarm goes off, you know, there is something out there that won't make you feel like that, you know.
Well, I can honestly say that I used to listen to people saying they enjoyed their job when I was working in engineering and think, how can you enjoy work? Yeah, but since I went into fishing tackle game, I've had massively tough times. I wonder if I'm going to go bust, but I've never had a problem getting out of bed. Never. You know, so as you say, Jamie,
There's something out there.
To anyone say, try and find a job that makes you happy, because you spend so much of your life doing it.
Yeah.
You know. Give it a try.
So you've ended up in an enviable position, and one of the things that I think every carp angler would like is his own lake. You've created a complex of lakes here on the farm where you live, with the jewel in the crown being the Copse Lake. You've got the church and the Copse, which are the two that people will be most aware of. You've got a beautifully landscaped lake immediately behind the offices that we're looking at now, which has probably got fishing that people that are significantly big enough for people to want to catch anyway. But I mean, the Copse, what I know your plan with that from the start was to just grow the best fish in the best possible environment you ever could, you know, perfect biomass, creating food sources in there for him. I mean, how do you feel now? Like, was it 15 years on, 16 years, maybe more?
It's about 16 since the two lakes were dug, and I stopped them 3 years later. Spent the first 3 years, you know, getting, as you say, the environment right. I've put thousands of snails in. That's why I swim in the end of the Copse. It's called the Sanctuary, because I had a mesh, fine mesh net across the front of that where the adult snail population, so as they bred, the little ones were going through the mesh, you know. Yeah. And it was really interesting as well, you know, when I had the fish up in the office lake before I moved them down, it's baiting heavily, and they started spawning every month, fresh on the surface. I thought, wow. I didn't realise I was poisoning them, baiting too heavy, and an ammonia breakout that was burning their gills. You know, it wasn't until they started dying. So, lesson learned the hard way, but a great lesson for the future. So when they went into the Copse, I started baiting, and every week doing ammonia checks. Well, we was baiting at 5 kilos, and then soon ammonia started breaking out. So I cut it down. Cut a long story short, that first year I could only bait at 2 kilos a week. The second year I could bait at 5 to 7 kilos a week. And then after that I could bait 20, 30 kilos a week and that, no ammonia. So it just shows how long it takes to get that system working for you naturally.
So what do you think was cutting the ammonia down? The fact that the fish were bigger and eating more, or just the reeds establishing and filling in the water? Or
if you're baiting, then you know they're eating the food and they're excreting it, you know, and so you know, whether the bait sitting there was being eaten, that's you're going to get
the ammonia.
It's as you say, you know, for example, marginals. We put 38 different marginals around the two lakes, and marginals reading that have a big role to play. You know, the ammonia blows it up to the surface, and the wind blows it to the edges, and the reeds and that suck it all in, you know, and deal with it. That's why around the airports they have all the reed beds, you know, there to deal with the antifreeze.
Right. It's I mean, what you achieved in that lake, I mean, it's done. You grew a 60 pounder in there, one Mark Holmes caught many years ago that people might remember. I mean, there's the, is it called the wood carving in there, the big common now, that could be 60 pound?
Chunky was last caught by Mark Holmes at 61. I caught it a few weeks before. He had it at 59.14, I think.
Yeah.
That fish was putting on £3 a year, and I really believe that was 70 plus. We think we lost it last year, we're not sure. I'd love it to turn up, but yeah, it's also done wood carving, the ounces under 60. That fish was fairly stable around low 50s and suddenly rocketed.
And
that it might be because Chunky's died. You know, you get this thing, one big fish, it dies and nobody replaces it. So I've got great hopes for the wood carving. But the Emperor, you know, the Emperor's a female, and when she's full of spawn, she just dwarfs anything. I think she's a good 60 plus when she's full of spawn, and then she just drops it all, you know. So, but yeah, it's done, as you know, it hasn't really been fished, but it's done. 9 different fish over 50 pound, so there should be 7 or 8 in there now, either capable or over 50.
And at some point in the future, maybe this year, you're going to open these lakes to the general public?
Yes, I am. Finally going to do it.
And the church has been well fished for quite a few years now. I mean, there's probably a lot of people listening to this that have had the opportunity to fish it, and a lot you've used it as a business tool for you know, there's shop owners fished it, and reps and you know, all sorts of people connected to the industry. But you've always kept the cops to yourself and for close friends, and people maybe get the chance to fish that one this year.
They're both going to be open. There's people think the church has been really totally exclusive, just a few friends, and as you say, your promotion has been on there. But I lost count at 200 people who've had their personal best out of there.
Wow.
So, you know, there's been, as you say, from shop owners to friends to people I thought owed a favour because of what they've done to the business. You know, it has in the last 3-4 years seen, you know, quite a lot of anglers, made them very happy. The cops, as you say, that has been kept very quiet, quite simply because I wanted one more go at Chunky, having seen how big it was.
Yeah.
But I wasn't prepared to go down and put the rod hours in on bottom baits and wade through the fish.
Yeah.
You know, so I was looking for it on the floater, not realising the small water syndrome. It wasn't until Alan went on there this year that I realised that you catch them once on a method, you're never going to catch them again. You know, he had the wood carving on a floater.
Yeah.
The only two that I didn't catch when I hit it on final count on floaters was the wood carving and what we call broken rib. Well, when he went on there this year, he thought he was going to do the same thing on final count. He was feeding in the riser, and it was only what we thought at the time, the emperor and the broken rib that were coming up. But even they were really very cautious. I mean, you know, the other big fish were cruising a foot under, but they just wouldn't come up. And we put it down to just cold water and spring, that top layer. But anyway, I was away in Portugal, and he's rang me and said, I've got the emperor, well done. And then I was fishing with him a month later, and it's called Big Common. He said it's a wood carve. I said it's not. I said that's the emperor, mate. So The original one he caught was a wood carve, which incidentally he only caught on nightfall, right tight against the reeds, and even that was feeding really cautious. Then I realised it. You know, he'd caught basically wood carving, the only one I never caught out of the bunch. You know, so Holmes caught Chunky on the floater.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, the water's basically been left unfished because I've been trying to find Chunky to catch it on a floater. You're never going to catch it, never going to take a floater again. And we've never seen that fish take a floater since Holmes caught it.
Some people don't realise that in small lakes, I mean, some of the trickiest lakes in history, you know, when you used to read about Maddox's Withy Pool years ago, you know, that one, in the early days, had a handful of fish in a small lake, and it was a tricky lake, wasn't it? I mean, people were coming up with all the Withy Pool rig, obviously came from that lake, didn't it? But I always remember reading stuff, people just saying how hard the fish were to catch, because it's very much their own environment. They know when you're fishing from, and what you said about Alan fishing it all summer and catching what, maybe two of the A team in total, it just shows you how tricky, even a lake that hadn't been fished.
I cut my teeth on Essex lakes, which basically I've always observed, you know, they're normally just a few acres. You know, there's not many big lakes in Essex, or there wasn't in the 70s. Okay, a few big pits may have been dug since then, but you know, that's the only sort of fishing I knew. It was only when I went to places like Harefield how it opened my eyes to actually how different those carp were, and in a way possibly a lot easier to catch. You know, at Harefield it's just about 3 bars, so there's going to be in one of the gullies.
Yeah.
So you put a rod in each bar, each gully, you know. If you've got a take, then you piled them all in, and you could have massive fish, you know, 4, 6, 8 fish, you know, whereas providing you was in that gully, which could be 100-200 yards long, the fish would be travelling up and down to get the takes, whereas in a small pit you're feeding there, it might be literally the size of a teacup.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why it's so much harder, and like you say, they're right on top of you, or you're on top of the fish, so they're much more aware.
It's a lot more personal.
That's why I've always been such a stealthy angler.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very personal fishing, like intimate lakes, I think, you know, it definitely, especially as long as the lakes aren't busy, I mean, it does feel like you against the angler, you find them in little corners, you're stalking, and like you say, with the kind of long chuck lakes, and Harefield's a great example, isn't it? It was, you know, it was quite a distance to those bars, and I don't know, I've always found bigger low stock lakes easier than smaller intricate lakes. Kind of always found that, you know, it's as simple as being on the end of a new wind sometimes, you know, on bigger lakes. And
give me 200 acres with 20 carp in it, you know, much easier to catch than 20 carp in an acre. Like you say, the any warm wind, they're going to be on it. Yeah, much easier to locate.
Yeah. And how are people going to get the opportunity? What are you going to do with the lake this year? Is it going to be like a whole lake booking? Have you not really decided how best to do it yet?
It's still, to be honest, coming to terms with the fact I am going to open the lakes, because, frankly speaking, I do have some concerns for the fish welfare and all that. So
of course, yeah.
Thinking long and hard how to do it. First, I'll explain why we're doing it. You know, we've spent over 400,000 in the last year doing, well, there's another lake, as you know, I didn't mention there's a new lake now.
At Royston?
Here.
Oh, here?
Yeah. And also we bought Royston to open as a premier day ticket water. And kind of that's one of the strategies of Nash in the future, that we want to get a portfolio of lakes, real quality day ticket lakes. Because, to be frank, what I've learned from Church and Cops and has made me realise that, you know, the quality of data lakes can be dramatically improved, and we really want to, you know, have a portfolio of real top quality data lakes for anglers to enjoy. So we need to get the investment back to, you know, continue buying or finding lakes to lease and develop them. So that's why I'm opening them, because we need to get some money out of them. The housing, the welfare, still a little bit to decide, but we've had some significant amounts of money suggested that people pay. You know, as I said to Crowley, he caught 280s this year, and he's craving the 4x4 over 50 on the church. You know, what's the best fish you ever caught in your life? And to be honest, I think most anglers would rather catch a £50 UK carp than a £100 carp from Europe. Yeah, that's the one that really matters. So we are getting some crazy offers. So I think what happened is we'll auction it for the first month, and then after that we'll settle down and agree on a fee. It'll be for the lake. Hopefully, we're thinking a maximum of 3 on the cops and a maximum of 6 on the church. And hopefully, you know, guys get their mates together, or ladies together. If not, and then there's, you know, they can't muster one, then maybe say, look, there's one place going on this particular week.
Yeah. I mean, you've got 50s in both lakes, potentially 60s in the cops, but it's more than the fish. I think I know from, you know, I've been lucky enough to fish the church probably 3 or 4 times over the last 10 years, and it's a really enjoyable place to be. I mean, you can see the love that you put in. I remember you telling me you'd hand planted all the trees, and they're not normal trees. They're not trees that you see everywhere. You know, they were picked from a garden centre, if I remember. And just being here, like, I always describe it as Jurassic Park, and not because of the monster carp that are in there, but just the feel of it, the noise of those frogs in the spring. And it's a beautiful place to be. It feels like you've gone on holiday somewhere. I mean,
everyone says that, I guess maybe I don't see it because I live here and walk around it every day, but you know, it is nice to hear what you're saying, Jamie.
There's something about the place, it always has been. I mean, you know, there's monster carp swimming about, but that's a small part of it. It's the, you know, the carefully manicured banks. I mean, I was lucky enough to catch a big fish on this trip, and there's a red bush, it's got no leaves on it, and it's bright red. You know, what a beautiful place to sit in front of and hold a very special fish. And you can see that there, I mean, I don't know if you deliberately picked a red bush by the side of the pegs, but the first thing I thought when I saw it was, wow, that's what I'd have done, seen it. You know, we want something with a nice bit of colour.
Well, I know nothing about plants or gardening or anything, but you know, I started reading up, and the point is that winter should not be a bleak season.
No.
Yeah, and so, as you're saying, we planted shrubs that could give winter colour, you know, like the ones you're talking about with the red stems. That's why you've got the silver birch, which are one of my favourites, actually. I just think they look stunning in winter.
Yeah.
You know. So, yeah, it's trying to think of all seasons, you know, make it, you know, place of beauty all seasons, winter or summer.
And what are those trees called that, like, have the curly arms that you've got all that's, round both lakes?
Contortilatus is a form of willow. Crooked willow is its other name.
They're fantastic looking. I always think as it goes dark, they look like what you'd see in a horror film, you know, like the curly trees that are set outside, like the big spooky house. I mean, that this is the point of these two lakes, is they're... They are quite magical, you know. I've always felt like that. It does feel like coming on holiday, and you know, you can pay what, $2,500 to go and fish Yarrawarra at a peak time of year and catch, you know, some heavily fed sort of monsters in a smallish lake. You can spend another £1,000 travelling there. I mean, I would hate to put a price on what I would pay to fish the Cops, but...
Well, we're looking at it as, you know, the Angs need to look at it as they're going on holiday. You know, like you say, you go to Teliax, which is a water I'm quite fond of in France. You know, it's going to cost you over £1,000 a week.
You know? Easy, yeah. Yeah,
you know, so we're only opening for 5-day sessions, by the way. Leaving the weekends so the fish can have a little rest and so hopefully keep the fishing going. But also... we're going to have a full-time bailiff 24/7 for those 24/5.
Yeah.
You know, so he's always going to be on hand to help people. And let's be honest, as I've seen on other waters that are accessible to the public with really big fish, sometimes they're actually scared when they've got this huge lump on the bank. You know,
of course,
and they
yeah.
welcome some help. And you know, obviously, you want to make sure the fish are looked after. So it'd be a 5-day holiday booking, if you like. And we've got the lodge up there, so they'll be able to shower, cook or whatever, or we bring takeaways in, you know, we've got to lose up here. So yeah, I see it more as having a holiday, and so because of the environment, like you're saying, hopefully people will appreciate it and see it like that.
Yeah, it's definitely got that holiday feel. I mean, it's beautiful to be here, and you know, and that's without catching, you know, add into the fact that there's some extremely special English fish that are swimming about there, and you know, that I had the biggest smile on my face. You were there the other day and I caught a special one, and you know, I was lucky the conditions were exceptional when I arrived. I mean, it's got a bit colder since, but
Jamie, I'm not having it, mate. That was class angling. I'm not blowing smoke, but that was class angling.
Well, thank you.
Here's one thing that slightly worries me. Yeah. The church isn't easy. Yeah, it's not rock hard, but it isn't easy. The Cops is definitely small water syndrome, you know, and really, you know, I want to make it clear, you know, you see Jamie or whoever, we run the big fish, you know, don't think you're just going to walk up and, you know, hammer it, you know. I would say to any angler who's going to book the Cops, and you know, I'm not trying to talk yourself out of money, because I want people to understand what they're getting into, is that you are fishing for just one bite. If you get a second or a third, that was happy days. But anyone coming to this Cop should be thinking, I'm paying just on the hope that I'll get one bite.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Alan is one of the best anglers I've ever seen. He tortures them fish, doesn't he? He hunts them and hunts them and doesn't give them a minute's peace. He chases them around the lake, he creeps up on them, and he's had the lake to himself pretty much all summer and caught what you would say is two of the A team, you know, the big fish that you fish for over the last 10 years. No, I don't doubt that for a minute, Kev. It goes without saying you're a legend, you know.
People will realise if they watch the final count before they come, then when they go, that, you know, actually that was quite good fishing.
Yeah, and it's... So what are the plans with the other lakes? I mean, I know you've been kind enough to let us have Royston for Carpcast Social in August, mm-hmm. and we've had more demand over that week than all the other lakes put together. I mean, I don't know if people want to fish it because they're getting onto something before it officially opens, or whether it's because it's Kevin Nash's lake, I don't know, but people want to fish that lake, you know.
Well, I don't want to be negative here, but I have observed that when waters are firstly open, they can be pretty tough.
Yeah, because the fish are in shock, aren't they?
Yeah, I warned Gary Bays about it, and I saw it when, you know, Sammy started fishing the Cops, and it is a thing that it's difficult to fish your own lake.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I've rarely, for example, fished the church. You know, I've been on waters where I'm actually neck in mud and reed beds trying to catch a 30, whereas I've had 50s, you know, in the church that, you know, I've never fished for, you know, but it is hard if you own a lake to fish it yourself. I don't know why, but the syndicate I had on the Cops couldn't catch, and you know, they're kind of looking at me thinking, are you sure the fish are in here? And that's why I applied myself to the Cops.
Yeah.
And you know, I wouldn't be at all surprised if the same applies to Royston. You know, we've got a good stock of fish in there, but you know, when they're first fished for, you know, they don't like having hooks stuck in them. It takes them a while to settle down.
Yeah, I'm going to go. I think if Alan gets time on Thursday when I leave, to have a look at it on the way home. And like I say, the demand is there. I mean, you know, that is the place people want to fish at the minute, and I'm sure it's because it's, you know, they know you're going to do it right. Everybody knows how kind of hallowed the church and the cops have been.
What
over
I found
the years.
Really interesting when you actually look at how many day ticket waters you can catch a 30-pound carp in.
Yeah.
In Essex, it's basically just Gary Bay's, and then they're driving up to Rich Wibley in Norfolk. They're sharing customers. It's crazy.
It's amazing for like one of the, you know, Essex was called Carp County for many years, isn't it? And
if it's like that in Essex, it makes me wonder what it's like in the rest of the country, Jamie. Truly, how many waters is there day ticket where you can catch a good chance of catching a 30 or indeed a 40? You know, when we open,
yeah.
When we open Royston, I would hope we've got 140 in each. And you know, a number of 30s coming up.
Like you say, there isn't many. I mean, if you had to say, right, let's go for social with my pals next week, let's go to a day ticket lake that's got a few 30s in and a 40, I mean,
how many up your way?
Not many. Like I said, there's probably one in each, not county but area. So the Northwest has got Wyreside, you've got the Linear at Oxford, you've got Lynch Hill down the road, but I mean, Oxford's a big old county. What else is there? I suppose you've got Orchid as well. But I mean, it's
see where I'm going. You know, maybe in 5-10 years' time, we could have half a dozen waters, you know, with 30s, 40s, and maybe even 50s.
There's a huge demand for it now as well, I think. I think the day ticket industry is big. You know, people are happy to pay £30 plus a day for a nice place to be at. You know, it's got to be comfortable. I know at Royston, you've put a track in around it, and I always look at the foreign lakes when I've been abroad. I mean, it's part of the culture. I mean, a lot of the, especially when I went to Romania for the open day that you did over there, the culture is going outdoors at the weekends. You know, that the whole family's there fishing on the side of the lake. They've all got a caravan or a camper or a big van and an awning set up on the side. And I always thought, why does nobody do that in the UK? Just being able to drive to your peg, number one, is important.
We was kind of a bit lucky, you know. Again, you know, that's, I live in a really secular world. I don't really go around day ticket lakes. I took a good friend to see Royston, who runs a day ticket lake, and he really knows the industry. And he just was blown away. He said, "Kevin, you know, you couldn't buy this, let alone find it." And what do you mean? You know, and he was saying beautifully wooded, you know, day ticket lakes, and plus somewhere where you can drive all the way around, are really rare. As Gary Bay's put it, huh? They can drive to a swim, you don't even need carp. Which I thought was love.
I agree. There's a day ticket place called the A1 Pits, which is it's kind of Yorkshire, Lincolnshire area. Newark it is.
Yeah, Newark.
And you can drive round, or there's a few lakes there. You can drive round them all. The fishing's, it's okay. It's not fantastic. That you cannot get a peg on there day in, day out, because some people take a full caravan and the whole family and they're there every week, and you know, whether they catch fish or not is irrelevant. The lakes are pretty tricky. They're not expensive to fish, but they are tricky. But it's just the fact that people are, they're having a weekend break, like, yeah, every week.
Particularly the round lake at Royston, it's beautiful. Yeah, you know, it's because of the shape, you can get a lot of swims on it. You know, we've made, wherever possible, big double swims. We want to eventually put picnic tables and all that up there. You know, I see it as a family thing. You know, because you know how big I am about encouraging the kids into the sport. You know,
yeah.
We want to encourage families, and I've already made up my mind, kids free. You know, I find it quite stunning that kids are charged on, you know, a lot of lakes. You know, they're our future. You know, so kids will be free, full stop. You know, we want to encourage families. You know, and as you say, you know, great weekend out, you know, for the family.
We have that philosophy with the Northern Angling Show, as you know. You've supported us from the start, and you know, kids are free there because it's really important. The kids are always going to come with an adult, but you know, they're free with an adult. And I know the passion that I had as a kid. There's a load of Facebook memes going about at the minute, you know, let's have a tackle box, not an Xbox type thing. It's a great thing. You get that fire in your belly at an early age, and it's
the
been with me.
Is, Jamie, they can't go on their own. You know, me and Anna have spent years working on formats to get kids into fishing, you know, as you know, yeah. We've done the bit in the local school, you know, helping the kids with scallywags before they got expelled, you know, we've done, and then every year does one at a local lake in the summer holidays, you know,
yeah.
It's mobbed out, parents turn up, drop the kids off, great, they've got the time to go shopping, pick the kid up, kid wants to go fishing, he never... That's it, you know, just a day. So, and what we've now realised, and we run a very successful scheme last year with a fishing club, is that you can't get a kid into fishing unless there's a parent to go with him.
Right.
So with this scheme, which actually, ingenuously, was Rayleigh Angling Club, where I first went, and yeah. I've always been very grateful, you know, would I be here now if it wasn't Rayleigh Angling Club and the carp? The chairman now, who used to be a young lad when I was on there, talking to him, and they disbanded the junior section. You know, and I actually did some research, and it's stunning the number of clubs who have dropped their junior sections. I'm going off target a bit there. So, yeah, so parents don't want to let the kids out of their sight. There's no word for them to go fishing. So we started this scheme where if the parent and a child did six sessions, then the child got free membership and the parent could join as well. And
yeah.
It was oversubscribed, you know, and it's been a great success. And that's what I've seen, and that's why I want to encourage families to Royston.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in our day, we just get, you know, my parents wouldn't see me from 8 o'clock in the morning till tea time. I'd be out in the fields, you know, newting, frogging, whatever, or fishing little ponds. Well, A, parents won't let them out of sight now, and there's a lot of reasons why. But B, those ponds and that aren't even there anymore.
Nope.
You know.
And then you add in iPhones.
All the park lakes, all the park lakes around here, the cows have, you know, put them out for people to take on, and so they're now charging 20 or 30 quid a day dating money. It's out of the kids. You know, reach, you know.
What do you think about, remember the lake Alan fished with the woman moaning at him on the Urban Banks, was it? And then did you hear the story about them, you know, wanting to kill the fish? you've got an opinion on that.
I've got a very strong opinion. You know. Fishermen and people who have outdoors pursuits have just as much right to the countryside.
Yeah.
We've got one near here, a park with a lake in it, and there's no vehicle access. The kids walk a couple of miles to get there, but the dog walkers have been, you know, letting their dogs run in the water. You know, it's been rows with fishermen, and the council have managed to get fishing banned. I'm not quite sure, but my understanding is that they have to allow fishing, but they've gone to Parliament and got some remit on that, where they don't have to allow fishing, and they've closed this fishing, this lake down for the kids. But the irony of it is that there were seniors managing this lake and making a little club with the kids to keep them out of the drug culture in the towns.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah. And, you know, where would I have been now? So I was a right wrong'un when I was a kid. You know, I had two ways to go. You know, I could easily go on the other way, and it was only fishing that saved me. Which is why I'm so passionate about, you know, fishing saved a lot of people. So that woman, you know, it just sat off the mark with her selfishness, you know, to have a nice little park and a lake.
And she believed anglers were spoiling it, you know. Right. I mean, being, I had this conversation with Alan, but like, you know, I was no angel when I was young, but I got into fishing at an early age. You know, I was a serious fisherman by 11 years old. I think I got a rod at 9. And even things like not littering, like I would think nothing of ripping a sweet paper and slinging it on the floor. And it's only when you start to spend time in nature and you see how much it detracts from, you know.
Tell a story, Jamie. I was fished Park Lake called Shrewsbury because there's couple of big carp in. No one knew, they just popped up. And I went down there one day. This is what, when I was in my 40s, I went down there one day, and every swim had someone in a box on it, float fishing, whatever. But when I walked around, there was one wide swim with this youngster fishing it. And, you know, I said to him, "Do you mind if I share the swim with you?" "There's enough for both of us." He said, "No problem." So sat down with him, we talked a day away. And then he packed up, and I noticed him just as he said bye, you know, he hadn't picked up his litter. I said, "Oi, you know, I said, mm-hmm. yeah. I said, you love fishing this place. You don't want to fish in a shithole. I said, why don't you pick up your litter, lad? So he picked up his litter, and then I fished with him another time. Yeah, I was in the swim. He come down. Yeah, you fished with him. And then his mum turned up the third time, and she said, would you mind, he's busting dudes going night fishing, would you mind to do, no problem. Because she said, she's a single parent, dad had run off. So anyway, like I said, this was when I was 40. Last year, I was on a lake, and this guy walked up to me. He said, you don't remember me, do you? He said, I met you at Shrewsbury Park, and you taught me so much. And he said, what you taught me was to respect nature, and litter. And I was blown away, absolutely blown away. But that's just one example of,
you've got to be in nature to appreciate it, haven't you? And the more, like I say, I was as guilty as the next kid my age, you get your sweet wrapper, you throw it down, and it's, I don't know, it makes me angry now. If I'm driving behind a car and they sling the McDonald's wrapper out the window or something, it makes me fuming. I take a picture of the registration number, I never do anything with it.
We're getting political again, but all this thing about so-called blood sports, and it's always, I might be a bit scathing, the townies, those who don't get the countryside and all that. But the point I make is the only ones who care about something are the only ones that look after it.
Yeah.
I used to live in the country, and the foxhounds hunt used to go past my house, and we had a wide green verge all the way up the side of our garden, which is about 100 yards long. And the antis would park all their cars on this green verge when the fox hunt were going past, shouting and screaming how cruel it is, we have poor old fox and all that. When they had gone, I used to have to pick up on average 3 dustbin bags of rubbish.
So they just slung out the car windows.
These are people that really care about country and environment. And I think that's where it's gone so wrong. People don't understand what country life and country pursuits are about.
And as we said, fishing is something that's not boring. It is something that a town person can get into, be introduced to countryside, especially if you introduce them as kids. And I mean, one of the fantastic things is kind of your it started off with the urban banks, and it's kind of created a craze of appreciating your local lakes. You don't have to live in a beautiful part of the country to be able to enjoy fishing now, and there's canals, park lakes, and you've got a whole range of tackle now that's kind of with that hunting, that urban hunting theme, the scope, the black ops stuff. And
another way of getting kids into fishing in towns.
Not everybody's privileged to live in the country, to live in beautiful surroundings, but the same token, if you're sick to death, if you're fishing your local park lake, you find some nice fish in there, you get that urge to hunt them down, and then there's bags of litter everywhere or crap on the side. Again, it's making you out there and actually say, hang on a minute, that bloody plastic bacon wrapper, it's been there 3 weeks now.
I'm not quite sure on the detail, but Alan did one in Bristol, didn't he? I haven't seen it yet, actually, but I think the point of that is that the council had this big water that was just a rubbish tip, and they've allowed anglers to move on there, and now they're looking after it, right in the middle of the city, And like I say, if someone cares for something, then they'll look after it.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Meanwhile, on the other side of the fence, as I say, we've got councils now trying to shut these pools down from fishing. The place I mentioned just now, you walk round it, there's litter everywhere. But that's purely because the kids don't fish it much in winter. Come summer, the kids will be back on there, ducking and diving the Walden. And I'll tell you, it'd be immaculate because those few seniors have taught them those things.
It's even made me smell the ducking and diving. The part of the excitement when I was a kid, again, was fishing. We call it guesting these days.
Next dimension, isn't it?
Yeah, not quite poaching, but again, it's a bit of excitement. You're not really, I'm not condoning people to break the law, but it's that hunting nature. It's good to bring it out in people, let's go and poach a local park lake or
And,
it's nothing more satisfying than a carp from a lake you're not meant to be fishing, let's be honest about it.
Of course, it's an extra bit of adrenaline, it's an extra buzz, and I think that's one of the great things about carp fishing.
I'm actually not quite sure about whether you are breaking the law. Yeah, yeah. The trespassing law is virtually impossible to enforce. Poaching, I believe, is only if you take it or retain it.
So
I'm not quite sure how many laws you are breaking. You've been a bit naughty, for sure, but were you actually breaking the law or not?
Yeah, and again, as long as you don't leave alone a line hanging about or bags of litter or whatever, and if nobody knows you've ever been there,
You're not going to do that, are you? Because you're discreetly guesting, don't you?
Exactly. Not if you want to go back again, for sure. Again, it's like carp fishing, it gives you that, you can go from serenity to chaos in the scream of an R3. You know, it's...
So, Jamie, some of the most memorable times were when we used to go to France in the 90s and fish Chanticleer,
yeah,
where there was no night fishing, and that was most of the fun, fishing a job and dodging the
Garde de Pêche. I mentioned the R3 briefly there. I know it's something that you're passionate about is bite indication. You were the first person to ever do an alarm that didn't just work on the distance that the roller moved, it worked on the speed that it moved at. Mm-hmm. I mean, what gave you the idea for that? And I know you've just got the R3s out now, which I think are a fantastic alarm. I mean, without it sounding like an advert, I know it's something you really believe in.
Yeah, well, it goes back to Warmworth, the mid-90s. I knew I was being done, and I worked on solving that problem. That's where the tube blowback rig came about. That could indicate if I'd been done. But I realised the big issue was the bite alarms. They couldn't give me an indication properly all the time, of a lead nudger that might have got pricked up, by the time I found out and wound in, the tube's been blown back, I would have had an opportunity to have nailed it, if I could have had proper bite indication. But the fact is that we both agree a roller wheel bite alarm is far superior to a vibration system.
Definitely.
Linear line movement, but they're only at maximum sensitivity when conditions are calm, no wind, no tow. When wind gets up or you've got a tow, you're desensitising them. The amount of line movement between bleeps increases, and that increase can often be more than just a quarter inch movement of just a lead being nudged and a fish being rigged up before it gets off. This was a problem I was aware of, and it was a long time later that someone actually told me about speed sensing, and I thought, wow. Basically, with the R3 and its predecessor, the RS1, your alarm, if you like, is always at maximum sensitivity, using that word in terms of there's a minimum amount of distance between bleeps, but we cut out all the false bites with monitoring the speed, i.e. on the lowest setting, no carp would give you a slower bite. So you can now fish knowing that bite alarm is your eyes underwater. If that bleeps, you nail it. If you don't nail it and it happens again, then you know there's something wrong with your rig. You've got to lengthen your hook link or whatever, but it's your eyes underwater. And I did observe that in the old days you used to use a bite alarm as a bite indicator, but nowadays you're listening around a lake, they're going off all the time. People just ignore it until they've got a screamer. They're fishing for screamers, they're not fishing for the many carp that just might give you a couple or a few bleeps and then they get off it.
I remember going through a 3-year period thinking I haven't had a fish that's took mine. from years ago when every bite was a screamer, when carp fishing was a lot less popular. And if you get a chance to fish in a lake that's not well fished, they're always screamers. But I was fishing the Woolpack, I fished St. Ives before that. And I remember thinking, I'm only catching maybe 6 to 10 carp a year, but I remember thinking that I can't remember the last time I had a screamer.
Winter we had the RS1 to the speed sensor, me and Adam on a lake. Through the winter we had 14 carp, 9 came to a single bleep. And I told you the story earlier, we was fishing under one night freezing, about probably about 40, 50 mile an hour wind, you know, really strong winds, and somewhere between 2 or 3 in the morning, I had a single bleep, shot out of his bed, hit it, and had a carp, and he turned around and said to me, I shit myself every time an RS1 goes off. You know, and that, you know, I just had to smile. That's the point. You know,
yeah.
One bleep, and we know.
You know, something
capital KNOW that something has occurred at the rig end.
Yeah, it's and then you've moved those alarms on now with the R3, which I think are fantastic. They're just so easy to use. All the buttons. I mean, the RS1s were great. I loved the speed on them, but they're quite complicated to use the receiver. Sometimes you just want to press the button, don't you?
Yeah, it was our first attempt, and you know, we learned a lot from what our customers wanted. You know, it was too complex. You know, so we learned from it. The R3 is a much simpler version. It can be a lot smaller because it hasn't got the remote, you know, control and all that. The range is off the planet. We did a lot of work on range. You know, certain other alarms I've used in the past. You know, I'd always have them. Cheers.
Yeah, it's fine.
From certain alarms.
Yeah.
Certain alarms I've used in the past, I've always had the heads full blast because I couldn't trust the remote. You know, even in cutouts, when the remote's only 6 foot away from me, couldn't cut through the bank or strong foliage. So I think the range you've got in the R3 is up to double a lot of our competitors, but more to the point, it will punch through, you know, most foliage or banks. So
yeah, and they're super loud as well. If you just want to use the heads, I mean, the heads are really loud. I can vouch for that. Some nice tones on them, simple to use. This is sounding like an advert, but I wouldn't say if I didn't like them, they're good.
I'll tell you a story, Jamie, about why I'm so convinced and passionate about them. I had this guy ring me up when we brought the first generation out, RS1s. You know, he said he joined a well-known syndicate and all the swims are pontoons, and he couldn't move around a pontoon without setting his alarm off, which was a certain vibration type. No disrespect to that, but so sensitive. He couldn't walk around the pontoons without setting it off. You know, he said, he's driving mad. He said, you know, will they solve the problem? I said, for sure they will. And then we went on. He'd been in the syndicate a couple of months, he was not doing very well. And then we went on to talk about bait, and I think by the time I recommended Monster Squid, we kept on talking. Somehow we got on the subject of Trigger Link, I can't remember. But anyway, 4 months later, he rang me back, and he told me an amazing story. He's now top rod. But the story he told me was, it was a night water. You know, only one. All the fish were caught at night. They got the takes at night. He said that he noticed with the RS1s that he kept on getting the odd bleep in the daytime, ignored it. And then one day, when he's going through a lean period, he thought about a trigger link I told him about, and he bought us one. So he put the trigger link out, and instead of having one odd bleep, he's got this bleep that's, you know, gone about six times, and he's hit it, and to his surprise, he's got a carp on the end. Cut a long story short, he was top rod because 3/4 of those carp he caught were in the daytime. So, yeah, in the daytime, they weren't giving screaming takes. They were definitely picking up baits. But you know, all that syndicate hadn't noticed that. And he became top rod because he caught those fish in the daytime.
Because you were catching them at night, you just presumed that you weren't catching in the day, yet the fish were feeding, just more finicky?
Finicky or whatever, or more cautiously. I don't know whether they could see the clear water, but, you know, if it weren't for the RS1s and the trigger link, he would never have known that.
No, and the trigger link, for people that don't know, it's probably one of the most underused, ingenious bits of hook link material I've ever seen, because you don't want to,
it's a massive edge, and, you know, it's only a massive edge until everyone gets on it, but it's too much like hard work. They've got to actually tie a combi knot or whatever, so it's great.
Yeah, I mean, it is quite thick, so it does need to be used in a combi link. But I mean, I remember back in the 80s, I was a kid then, but we were using what we called confidence rigs at the time, and you kind of make it with like double elastic, which is essentially what the trigger link does with a braid now, isn't it?
That's where it came from, Jamie. As you will remember, it's such a pain to get the lengths right, wasn't it?
Yeah.
With the elastic, and that's where the idea came from, i.e., I wanted an elastic hook link, but to fix it so it didn't stretch, so I could, you know, tie my rigs. You know, the genius bit is that we put PVA in it. Mm. You know, and so, you know, when it's in water, then the PVA melts and it stretches.
Becomes stretchy, yeah. The to be fair, I have it in my tackle box every time I go fishing, and I rarely use it when I'm struggling. When I'm struggling now, I put a zig on instead of trying to change my rig. I mean, that's my go-to, right? It's not fishing very well, so let's bang a zig out. But I remember I was fishing with Mark Watson a couple of years ago on a day ticket lake, and I'd blanked. He'd come for one night, sit next to me just for a social on this point. We shared it, and he banged a rig out long, and he used trigger link in the combi link, and he caught the only fish of the week on that lake. And I've seen that, and I still don't automatically go to it when I'm struggling.
It's strange. You know, Mickey Henderson was down the other week,
yeah,
and he's on trigger link rigs. He said, Kevin, there's such a massive edge. He said, but do you know what? He's only when I come down here, I use them. He knows the SS carp are going to be harder than his
he's come to a tricky special lake.
But yeah, if you want to see trigger link in action, actually look, watch my In Pursuit when I had the wood carp.
Yeah.
You know, the tape was just twitchy, twitchy, twitchy. Yeah. And that's where you see, you know, the first time you use it on the water, you just get a load of, you know, just lifts up and down, you know what's happened. The carp's rigged up, he's trying to get with the lead. What the hell's going on here? You know, it normally works, you know, and if you leave it, it then knows it's done and it'll panic. But you know, you always get little twitchy takes at the beginning because they've never come across it before. You know, it just, it's a signpost that you've got an edge,
yeah. You know? So we now know if you're struggling on any water, a set of RS3s and some trigger link.
No, mate. If you want to milk a water, and, you know, why would you use a lesser method when you can go in with the best straight away?
Yeah, yeah, without doubt. And
there was a funny story in your book that involved Gary Bayes and you not wanting to get off your bed chair. Was it because you were fishing in the edge?
Yeah, you're right, Jamie. Let's go back a bit. I arrived late one afternoon. There was one guy on the lake, been on about 3 years, funny guy, used to have an old Cavanet, and his basically is a tramp. I remember he got his Cavanet broken into. He left one boot in there with a hole in it, and someone smashed the windows just to nick the boot. Just shows right there the snake pit it was. Yeah, but anyway, I turned up and he said he'd seen the Commons Petroleum along what in essence is the gate bank, the long bank. And I'm thinking, right, well, why are you fishing over the other side? Happy days. So I walked down there and sure enough I saw, you know, the two Commons, which were the only fish in the lake at the time, patrolling up and down. And they were patrolling from the gate down along the weed fringe, and then near the bottom end, the weed kind of went into a horseshoe, and I noticed they go into that horseshoe and turn round and go back up the lake. So I thought, right, that's an ambush point where, you know, carp turn round. And so I made my way down in my gear. Well, it was a steep bank. There was just one little patch clear at the bottom where a matchman had obviously cleared it to put his box. It was the size of a seat box. So I've gone down, stood on that. Basically, I opened my umbrella to push the brambles back to hold them at bay so I could then put my bed chair down in that. And that is how tight the area was. You know, the only place I had for dry land was this little square patch next to the bed chair. So that was my lot. Anyway, there's a bit more to this story. In the evening, I've heard a rustle in the bushes up on the top bank. But what the hell was that? I've climbed up the bank, and a shotgun has stuck out the bushes, pointing at me. Oh. So I just turned around, either pull the trigger or get the bleep out of there. And out rolls two other local urchins, for it was immensely hilarious that they pointed the shotgun at me. So anyway, got a load of tinnies, and we sat there and a few tinnies, and then luckily they went, and I got back in the swim and settled down for the night. Well, I woke up, can't remember, I think it was around 4 o'clock, it was light, you know, this is June, to one bleep And as I looked out, because, you know, I was margin fishing, I saw one or two little tiny pin prick bubbles come up, and I'm thinking, gill bubbles, they're here. Oh my God, you know, frozen to my bed chair, you know, because this was the original Fox bed chairs that used to creak and whatever, you know. Slightest movement, paranoia, I'm right on top of the fish, I didn't want to spook them. So, you know, I'm laying there, frozen to the spot, waiting for the take, it's not happening, you know, nothing's happening. Slightly moved to look out, creak, you know. But as I'm laying there, I'm thinking, I desperately need a week. You know, I'm trying to hold it back and hold it back, just creak all the time, but it's just got too much. And so, I mean, the predicament is, all I've got is this little tiny space to put my feet down, and I haven't got my shoes on, they're underneath the bed chair, so I've only got my socks on, so, you know, I can't just lean out of the bed chair and wee, because I'm going to, you know, wee on the spot where I'm going to stand. So, what was the solution? Well, in the night, I've been drinking a bottle of lemonade, and, you know, there wasn't a great deal left, so I thought, right, I'll wee into that. And that in its own was, you know, quite a task, you know, I wouldn't. I only just imagine, you know, admit I'm the biggest dick in the world, but trying to, you know, line it up with, you know, a lemonade bottle opening wasn't easy, but, you know, having a shot through dribbles would go away with that. Oh, it was immense, you know, I'm sure a lot of guys have been there where you need to go and for whatever reason you can't, and the pain builds up and the bills up until your eyes start watering. You know, that's where I was at, because my paranoia of not messing up, you know, is possible. Rare opportunity. Anyway, such relief. I laid back and I must have dozed off for many seconds. Suddenly, I got a screamer, you know, one toner, jumped off the bed, hit it, taken line, and then it went solid. You know, oh no, after all this blah blah. Anyway, I'm light piled on the pressure, and slowly, you must have been, you get those times where you think, is it moving or isn't it? But
yeah,
slowly I was convinced it was moving towards me. Just an absolute dead weight, and you know, definitely was beginning to feel I'm making ground, because I got a couple of wraps on the reel, pumping, and in the depths I could see what looked like a red stripe. Thinking, what the hell is, you know, it's coming up through the depths. Then I realised it had words on it, Sainsbury's. It was a supermarket trolley, and without a bottom, you know, the local bathers had chucked it in the lake, this carp had shot through the supermarket trolley, and off it had gone. So now I'm in a real predicament, you know, I'm attached to a snake pit common and a supermarket trolley. Luckily, the bather for the local club, who had control at the time, Malden, had decided to do a night on there. There'd been a committee meeting the week before, Nashie was using three rods, and they put him on there that night to nick me, but I saw him turn up, so wearing one rod, because I was only fishing two anyway. So he come round and helped me sort out the mess, and we eventually landed the Sainsbury supermarket trolley and the carp. So that's where we're up to now. So I rang Gary, I think it's about 5 o'clock now, mate, and said, you know, any chance you can come out and photograph this common for me? Yeah, mate. And don't forget, I was gobsmacked. He turned up in like half an hour when he lived, God, probably an hour away. You know, so the speed he turned up was incredible. But anyway, so we struggled with the sack up the steep bank, got it on the top bank, we're photographing it, and there's one of those fish that really doesn't handle being photographed. Some fish really do get stressed up. I don't know where I had it, but it went like a banana, rigid, and you know, you could see the colour change in it. So I was really concerned about getting it photographed quick and back. Anyway, he's taking the photos. He looked down his camera and said, shit, I haven't got any film in it. So, like, you know, we had a little bit of a discussion over that. You know, anyway, he finally got the job done. Took it back down, I released it, and I'm watching it swim away, and I turned round, and he's drinking me lemonade, or me pee with lemonade, you know, and I went, ah! I thought, nah, yeah, and I never told him until about a year later that, you know, he drank all that piss.
Did he not even notice?
No, didn't he know, it's tickled Gary Bays, I mean, it, you know, absolute animal.
That is typical, yeah. Anyone who's fished with him
will know.
Yeah, he doesn't take any water fishing. He'll fill his, well, he used to fill a kettle up at the lake, but nobody had brews with him, so he then took an empty water bottle to fill up at the lake to fill his kettle up with, so that people would have a brew. But yeah, that's Gary. He's pretty rough, isn't he?
So you say he's filling the lake with the water. He'd also fill his kettle with lake water. Yeah. He'd also fill the kettle with all the mud, snails, and pondweed as well. Yeah. You see him stirring his cup of tea and pull out a lump of pondweed or a snail that's just been nuked. Animal.
I expect you've got a few Gary Bay stories, actually. When did
I could write another memoirs of Carp Fisher just on Gary Bay's.
We do hope to get him on at some point, obviously, to chat about the bay and stuff. How did you two meet?
Because of Rod Hutchinson ringing me up and asking me if I'd help him bail him out of his ship, basically, catch him going bust. And so I went in there, and Gary was foreman, if you like, of the bait side at the time, and that's how I met him.
Right.
It's carp fishing history now, but I turned the company round, and it was a struggle with Rod, bless him, because he wasn't used to having financial restraint, and when I turned it round, he wanted it back, and so I rang up Gary in recognition of his loyalty and how the staff had worked their plums off to turn it round. To be honest, I'd had enough of Rod, and I say that, bless him, I love him to bits, and that's just a bad time in our lives, just like my ex-wives, I guess, bad for a moment, but we're still great friends now. But anyway, I digress, and I said, Gary, Rod wants the business back, I'll happily give it back, but because of your loyalty and everyone's hard work, it's your call. And he got off the phone, come back, and said, if Rod takes it back over, we will all leave. So the bugger kind of forced me into taking the nightmare on. I always said, Captain cost me $180,000, near bankrupted Nash, and all I got out of it was Gary Bay's.
I think he's worth $180,000. I mean, the Nash Bait brand now, is extremely solid, isn't it, I think, these days.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with that. It's just the grief he's caused me over the years. Gary's the ultimate wind-up merchant. He's always got to wind you up, I learned a long time ago the only way to deal with him is not react. So I used to have a point system. Every time he wound me up, I'd just score in points. And when he got me to 100, that's when the Armageddon would kick off, and I'd pay him back. One, for example, reversing my G-Wagon at 40 mile an hour of top reversing speed, 50 yards straight into the front of his new Escort van.
What, deliberately?
Sorry, yeah. He got to 100 points and I saw him get into his... No, as he was filming, he'd been winding up all the way for the filming. Actually, I saw his wife get in the driver's seat, put her seatbelt on, and like a woman, I knew she'd be another 5 minutes, and sorting out her shoes, her lipstick and everything, and he wouldn't be able to react because he's a great driver. So I saw my opportunity, so just floored it and reversed it straight into the front of his van. The rest of the story here is that he'd only had it 2 weeks, but he'd already smashed it all in the side, so I thought, great. I can total him and he can put it all on his insurance claim. But what happened? You put the claim in 2 days before, so I had to pay for the damage.
For anybody that doesn't know, Gary seems to take pleasure in watching other people suffer, doesn't he?
He does. I'm not putting myself in a good light here, Jamie. I have to say, this is my errant youth. I like to think of grown up now and become boring like all mature citizens do.
Well, I'm sure there's never a dull moment with Gary, but him winding you up to the point of totaling his car is pretty extreme, I think.
Yeah.
As the bait develops, I mean, what happened? You gave the company back to Rod. Did Nash actually buy Catchem? I mean, how did that work?
Basically, Lloyd's got together, it was carved up. There were certain things Rod wanted, and the one thing I majorly wanted, but he didn't want at all, was a burley rolling operation, because that's what I saw as a future of carp fishing. You know, mad as it sounds, this is a time when it's all about base mixes, and but you know, I just thought, you know, that's not the future. People aren't going to want to roll their own bait, and the future's a burley machine. So really, in a way, Rob got what he wanted, and I got what I wanted. But then the next thing was, there was massive confusion in the marketplace. We relaunched this Obsession Baits using Rob Mailing. And did we, or was it something before? We couldn't relaunch it. No, we relaunched it. Firstly, I'm forgetting. We were Catch'em 88, Rod starting up a new company, Rod Hutchinson, and there's all this confusion. And for example, I had a Scopex. Well, Rod had told me that, you know, the three unique suppliers and ingredients for Scopex, so I went to them and got a exclusivity agreement. And so, you know, there's all this silly stuff going on. Rod saying he's got the original Scopex, and we're saying we've got the original Scopex. So, yeah. And then Tim Paisley, bless him, let Rod write a letter in Cart World, you know, which really was washing our dirty laundry in public, which I felt I'm compelled to reply to. So, it was a horrible time, the big mess and the fight. So, really, both companies suffered from it, because company anglers didn't know the hell what was going on and who had what. So we then relaunched with Rob Mailing, who was, you know, kingpin at the time, an awesome angler. And by the way, I think Rob has been a very much underrated angler. Yes, he was a name, but I just don't think people really understand how damn good that guy was or is. So anyway, we relaunched under his name, but that wasn't a success. You know, what I learned from that is that the name of the moment is not established enough in, you know, in carp fishing to be, you know, a good revenue source. So that failed, and it was at a point where the shops couldn't sell the Rob Mailing gear, and I didn't want that to reflect on Nash Tackle. And so but we had good sales in Europe still because of Rod Hutchinson's name, you know, when you had Catch'em. So I said to Gary one day, look, I think we have to pull out of England because it might impact on Nash Tackle. And he, obviously being passionate about the bait, didn't want to do that. So I said, okay then, we'll give it one more go under Nash. It's Nash bait. But my real concern was that anglers, you know, at the end of the day, Jamie, you know, the best bait in the world, but if you're not using it properly or capable, then you're blank. And what do? You always blame the bait. So my concern was that, you know, if they blanked on the bait, then they might blame the tackle as well, and it could impact on Nash Tackle. But actually, the opposite happened. We, you know, we launched this range of gear on, which was based on some of the great baits that Rod, Gary, and whoever in the team developed, plus, yeah, a lot of my bait stuff that I kept secret, like the attractors based on the zoo industry and all that. And so with the merging of all my bait secrets and Catch'ems, and we launched, and it was actually the opposite. The phone was red hot with people saying, well, the tackle's great, so the bait must be as well. Yeah, as you say, the rest is history.
That's really interesting. There's a couple of things there. I mean, firstly, the younger carpers probably don't relate to what you're saying about the base mixes. I mean, back in the day, like the late 80s and mid 90s, people used to just buy the base mix and roll it themselves. Everyone used to buy the Gardner rollable machines that did like 10 boilies at a time, wasn't it, or something? Like you made the sausages, and it was extremely It was rewarding when you caught on your own bait, even though you're rolling someone else's bait mix and adding your own flavour combination. Like, I still think it was rewarding when you caught a fish in it, but it didn't have to take a long time. I mean, I used to make it every session, so I'd make basically a 6-egg mix, which was, I don't know, like 120 boilies or something in kind of, you know, 14 mil, or I think it was a 14 mil roller I had. Like, I can't imagine, I know some people do, but you know, they're people that are really, you know, make actually designing their own bait, but it's usually hook baits now. But I mean, obviously you had the foresight that people, it was time consuming, people wanted to buy ready roll baits, but we just take it for granted now because you hardly even see the base mixes on offer, do you?
You can't send them. You know, we actually dropped all our flavours a couple of years ago and base mixes because, you know, say no one wants to do one now.
It's really interesting. And the Scopex, is Scopex a mix of other things? And it's, you know, the combined name is Scopex. I mean, is that how that came about?
Scopex is three flavours blended together. One's a particular vanilla, one's a butter, and the third is a cream. But, yeah. Yeah. How many copies of Scopex is there? Yeah. It's a butter and a cream and a vanilla don't make a Scopex. It's particular characteristics of those three types of flavour from the specific suppliers that make Scopex so unique. And the original Scopex is a mind-blowing, you know, attractor. It's probably in terms of carp captures, the most successful attractor ever, and then I would say probably squid after that in the history of carp fishing. That's very cool. Interesting thing about it, Jamie, one of the reasons it is so enormous in Europe, you know, still is, but has been, is because if you don't put it in a fish meal type base, the crayfish don't particularly get on it.
I remember you saying this once before, when I was fishing on Frying Inn, it had quite a lot of crayfish in there, and I was coating my like all the plastic baits I was using, just coating it in your Scopex. But how did you come up with the name Scopex? Was it the initials of the ingredients?
I have not got a clue where the name comes from. No, it's nothing to do with the ingredients. You know, just one of them, I suppose. Rod was on the wacky backy one night and just come out and said, oh, that's not liable, Rod. Don't sue me. But no, I never tweaked the crayfish thing. It was only when I was watching a slideshow in Belgium by Steve Briggs. God, I mean, this is going back. This would be in the early 90s. And he was talking about this French venue that he hammered, you know, on Scopex, you know, and I knew it was full of crayfish, and I said, did you have this crayfish trouble? And he said, no, I didn't. And then, you know, I tweaked it, you know, and so what we was then doing on some of the French waters with, yeah, for me it's about food source. Find the food source, the carp on the food source, and then you cracked it. So, example, Lac de Bear, yeah, I knew the crays fed at 15 foot, so we'd arrive at Lac de Bear, go out on the boats, we'd echo sound until we found, you know, some of the submerged tree areas, and then we'd go off that until we found 15 foot, and then we'd fill it in with trout pellet and just fish Scopex over the top. You know, the trout pellet attracted the crays. The carp would always be sitting in the submerged wood trees in the bay, so we knew they was there. So we'd say bait nearest to them at 15 foot, knowing that's where the crays were, so we'd attract the crays, we should attract the carp, and we'd get the carp because he wasn't, you know, because he was using Scopex. As simple as that.
And did the crays slow down anyway once the carp moved in? Did they know they were kind of being they were targets anyways?
I've never found crays seem to slow down when carp turn up or not. You know, if you're on the bait there, you just seem to get hammered by them, and you know, the point is you just don't know whether you've got a bait out there or whether they're tangled up the hook rig, you know. And I'm not sure if carp eat fully adult crays anyway. I know they will in some circumstances if they're hungry enough, but you know, that's quite an awesome beast to take on. You know, I once had a fish tank of carp, you know, home here, you know, for my little boy Joe as he was growing up, and then I put three crays in there. Within a week, I had no carp and only one cray.
Really?
Yeah, vicious bastards. They eat anything. So, you get a 9-inch signal. If I was there, any self-respecting carp, I think I'd keep away from that. It's a much easier way to make a living.
It's always when I saw the size of some of those in frying, it always baffled me as to how the carp eat them. I'm sure they eat the small ones, the babies and stuff.
Exactly. I think that's exactly what's happening. You know, unless I was really forced to take one on, they're eating the the small ones, young ones.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, what do you think about carp eating other fish? Have you found it? Have you found it common? I mean, I've seen carp moving on the bream spawn. I've seen them eat fry. Do you think like other fish is part of their kind of natural diet, like where they'll actively, you know, go looking for them?
So I've got a simple view on it, Jamie. Carp would always take advantage of the most readily available and abundant food source. We terms fry. I've fished one lake where they used to hammer the bream fry, and what they would do, they'd group up in threes or fours, mid around on the surface. If you saw them doing it and cast the bottom bait out, you get takes. And what I think they'd do in that particular situation, they're smashing the fry on the surface, and then they go down and pick them up, and they pick up the barley. I've seen other waters where, one way I'm talking here, where I was walking around the lake, I saw it was black with fry, and I just saw these carp slowly moving through it, and for sure, on observation, the Warmwell carp would almost be like whales feeding on plankton. They just would go through those fry, sucking them in. And it was also interesting that in the midsummer, Warmwell was a real ball breaker, and suddenly it would switch on after the August bank holiday. And my take on that was that the fry were then too big for them to crop in that way. They love gudgeon. I once used to fish a lake called Lake Meadows, a public lake in a park, and he's in the 70s now, you know, and one winter this guy turned up piking with gudgeon. You couldn't stop getting takes. And funny enough, not long ago I was talking to a guy who said that he had a fish tank full of mixed fish, you know, roach and whatever, everything, and carp, all living happily together. He got hold of some gudgeon, put them in one evening, went back the next morning, they'd all been eaten. They really do love gudgeon.
Interesting.
But so, it's simple, yeah. If a fryer that eases available food source of crop, carp will get on it. They're so in tune with the environment, they really are.
That's really interesting. I mean, I don't know how you'd use that other than noticing the fry in an area and fishing in that area. I don't know how you could create that situation yourself. You know, I mean, I've always believed like carp kind of allow us to catch them when they're feeding so happy that you know, that they'll slip up, they'll throw caution to the wind, and so creating a situation for me is really, you know, is the most important thing. And if you can turn them on with whatever it is, whether it be, you know, natural baits, worms, maggots, fry, liquids in the water, something that just triggers that, you know, that urge to eat, where they throw caution to the wind, then that's when ordinary anglers catch, you know, less thinking anglers, they still on them like bite weeks, where, you know, there's a week in the spring and a week in the autumn usually where everybody catches, you know, the whole stock of the lake gets caught. And you know, it seems to me, no matter what rigs you're using or how good an angler they are, they still catch. And I think that's because the carp are almost hanging themselves because they're so turned on to eating.
Exactly that, Jamie. And that's why I guess in the last decade, you know, what's really rocked my box is understanding how to catch them on, you know, on the naturals and all that, you know. For example, winter fishing, when I first got into it, it was as good as summer, you know, it's just very narrow window, so instead of, say, sitting there for a day in summer to catch 2-3 carp, you could catch them in an hour in winter. Yeah, and then all these things started. Why can't we catch a carp anymore in winter? They was talking about they've been fed too much with fish meals and all this rubbish. It was simple to me. They've been hammered on bodies all summer, and in winter there was no greed, so you couldn't get them to make a mistake. And I always said, you never trick a carp up on the rig. You know, you trick it up on green with the bait. You know, but winter is a really challenging time to try and catch them on unnatural food items. You know, and there was one year I went in on the cops and absolutely hammered them, just like summer fishing, using snails. You know, yeah. And I think this is a whole area of carp. And when you're saying naturals, I don't call maggots naturals. You know, I think there's a whole area of carp fishing so exciting, still to be explored, you know, of actually hitting onto their food sources at that time, the natural food sources that it would take without danger. So all the work I've done on jigs, that is similar, you know, understanding they're spending so much of their life mid-surface and eating, you know, eating all those various insects and stuff there without being caught. You know, it's, you know, it weren't rocket science. You know, he was going to be able to rate waters if anglers got their heads round zigs, and indeed we have, you know.
That was my next point. Zigs has been kind of the most revolutionary change to how we fish for carp in the last 25 years, I think, you know, since the hair rig, because we're catching, it's a completely new method that the carp are falling for heavily. You know, it can be the difference between getting no bites and absolutely empty in a lake, having a red letter session. Do you think there's something else that's going to happen that will have a similar sort of impact? Do you think we've done it all now, or can you see there's something new around the corner?
Well, I think it's understanding and attacking them it's going to be two ways. It's going to be, yeah, obviously finding a method which completely catches them out. You know, we just mentioned zigs. In other words, I've been spending all this time feeding mid-surface without being caught. Another example is chods. You know, yeah. The chod success is simple to me. It just enabled anglers to present a bait in areas of a lake where they didn't present a bait before, and so the carp knew they were safe areas. You know, carp fishing is always about finding out where they feel safe and get away with it, and then just exploring that and reaping the harvest, you know. Yeah, bloodworm, for example, you know.
Yeah.
This whole preoccupation with bloodworm and all that. You know, I remember reading articles by Tim Paisley, bless him, in the 90s, where he's talking about bubblers and all that, you know, and their and preoccupation almost in a mystical way, you know, that, you know, these carp were uncatchable, whereas, you know, I was on it and catching these bubblers, you know, who were on bloodworm. And, you know, when you think about it, a preoccupied carp is one having it off on the food source, so all you got to do is sort that out, and then you're going to have the best results of your year or life. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Preoccupation is not a negative, it's a positive. It's just a question of figuring out what they're doing, how they're doing it, and then applying it and catching them.
Yeah, I completely agree. The first time we had you on a year ago, right at the end of the interview, you teased us with something brand new, like product wise. You kind of teased it and didn't let us know. I mean, is there anything else that's going to revolutionise, like equipment wise, or is there something again that's still being worked on, something that'll blow people's minds?
Well, I think when I teased you, that was in anticipation of its announcement and launch. We're still working on it, and it may be one day I can launch it, or if I don't go bankrupt in the meantime. I've done it 4 years, and you know, it's cost the company a flipping fortune, and we're still not sure if the technology can work and be applied.
Got you. Okay, we'll leave that.
That's a great injustice of innovation and innovators. You know, they're the ones who put all the investment, time and risk and everything into it, you know, bring it to market, and then buggers just rip it off, you know, and they haven't gone through that cost and everything, and so they just, in essence, are thieves, you know, raping you for everything you've done. So does that sound harsh, but that's how it is?
No, people don't realise. I mean, by the time a product's finished and released, it might look actually quite simple, on the surface. It's, because things are quite logical usually, aren't they, when things work correctly? Mm-hmm. But the journey to get to that point, from having the idea to getting moulds made and prototypes and trying it and adapting it, and can take a lot of time and cost thousands, hundreds of thousands in some cases. And by the time it comes out, a factory in China or somewhere or another company, that's a really simple idea, I'll make one of them. Compensate for the blood, sweat and tears that have gone into it through all that time. We had Adam Penning on a while back, and he told his own story of when he smashed up a load of copies of the grinder thing is a show, and he said exactly the same thing. He went, I was involved, it looks just like it's a herb grinder, that's what it looks like, he said, but the amount of prototypes and blood, sweat and tears went into getting it right, and then somebody just copied it, I lost my rank. He kind of explained exactly what you did there.
I can understand exactly what happened that day with Adam, and at times I've wanted to get the shotgun out, but you can't do that in a civilised society, and you just have to. You spend all your life, hating everyone and everything, to my mind, soul, and a great well-being is everything. So, hey, to my mind, it's their problem. What have they gained? What respect can they have for themselves? So let them get on with it. The figures, as I say, the RS1, for example, our first bite alarm, that really has given us the biggest revolution in carp fishing, indication, the speed sensing. How much you reckon that cost you about, Jamie?
No, I remember it was a lot of years in running. I came down for meetings.
It was 3 years and $200,000.
Wow. That's a lot. I mean, you've got the benefit of it now with the RS3s, which
We lost money on the RS1, but give us the grounding and the learning curve and the experience, and now the R3, which any angles on it must be on an R3. It's only alarm to have.
First of all, we've been chatting for an hour now, which is, for the general interview, that's as long as we go, but I would like to say an extra special thank you to Kevin, because he was our first ever guest. I mean, we're 150,000 downloads further on from the first...
Congratulations, Johnny.
From the first time we spoke, you were our first ever guest on episode one, and a year to the day, virtually, we've been running now, and we've had 150,000 downloads, and you were the catalyst to get us off the ground, to put a name behind it.
What did you be on 300,000 downloads if you hadn't had me on at the beginning?
I don't know. I mean, it's built. I mean, there's still now. I mean, the beauty of this as a medium is when people we have new people find us every week, and the first thing they do, because all the other episodes flash up on their phone on their iTunes, they go, "Oh, Kevin Nash was episode one." Your episode one still gets 500 new downloads every month a year on, and I mean, that doesn't happen in any other medium. Nobody discovers, fantastic magazine Carp World or Carp Talk and goes and buys last year's copy. That it doesn't happen.
I think it's genius what you hit on. Just such easy listening, and what a great medium when you're fishing.
It passes the time when you're driving, and
at night,
them dark nights on the bank, people are saying.
I used to always have the radio on. But you got your podcast out. It's that first, and then the radio one.
And it's introducing people to other podcasts. There's quite a few good spoken. I listen to the murder mystery ones. There's a few now. I don't listen to the radio fishing anymore. And these long winter nights, you need something to pass the time.
Yeah, enough to make the point. Your depth you can get into. People like Mark Holmes. You couldn't be what some of the things he said in that one you did with him. You could. You wouldn't read it or hear it.
You think someone's taking the mickey if you read it in a magazine, and then, but when you hear somebody tell it themselves, and you get into somebody's mind, don't you? You see how they're thinking and the reasons behind it. It's a powerful medium, and I'd like to say thank you for
for coming on our 1 year anniversary.
Well, thank you for having me, Jamie. So it's always a pleasure to catch up with you, mate. You don't do it often enough.